Look at your fucking suntan, like a leather man. Your skin, you can make a fucking suitcase out of you, old all. Look like a crocodile, fat bastard. You look like a fucking Idi Amin, you know what I mean?
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 123 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
A, B, C.
Easy as one, two, three.
Enough of that, stop.
Yes.
We've got a lot of good stuff coming up on this episode, so I want to get right into it.
Our review this time is Spider-Man Far From Home, the first Marvel film since Avengers Endgame. So for me, I can't fucking wait.
Yeah, and to be fair, it has been all of 3 days since Endgame came out, so we were due a new one.
And the rewatch. Yes, 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 yes. It's Sexy Beast.
Oh, man, I can't wait to get going on that one.
I want to get into that.
It's going to be the first time I've ever seen it as well.
No.
Yeah.
That's amazing to me that you've not seen this before.
I've seen a few sexy beasts, but not this one.
I thought he was going to say, when I look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Oh,
damn, yeah. I missed that one.
And in stark contrast to that, our topic this time round, top three musicals.
Wow.
I can't get over you even suggesting this.
Well, I knew we just had to get it out of the way at some point.
Talking about getting it out of the way, the movie masturbate this time is Steven Spielberg. I don't know how it's taken this long, but it's happened. And I'll be honest with you, I just can't wait. I can't.
The man, the myth, the legend. That's going to be a big one. And to say what we say on every goddamn episode, it's our most popular one on social media.
Brilliant.
It's been huge.
Total truth.
Until we have Tommy Wiseau, I think this will be the
top
one.
Well, that day will come soon enough. And it is the third and final round of our summer blockbusting quiz, A Test of Character. It's going to be Ben versus Mark, and it's all to play for the wooden spoon.
Oh, shit. Yeah, we can't win.
No.
Should we just scrap it then?
Yeah.
We'll get 15 minutes back.
Let's just cancel the whole thing. No one would. And of course, we'll have all the usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week, and we'll give away a crazy amount of prizes. But enough of this bullshit. Let's get started. Topic of conversation this time round, top three musicals.
Look at his face.
He said that with such warmth.
As you'll see when it gets to my choices, I've chosen the least musically musicals you'll ever see.
He's like a Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Because there's
Blade
a bit
Runner
of music in it.
Star Wars and
an old boy.
They are legitimately musicals though, but yeah.
Yes.
You'll see what I mean when we get there.
Okay.
Gemma, I kind of know that you like a bit of musical film, so I kind of have a feeling of what sort of things you're going to pick, whereas Mark, I'm not so sure. I think he might have picked La La Land 3 times.
It's like a blank page.
Yeah. So I'm going to go to Mark first.
Well, my first one is La La Land.
Hey, mate, I got it too.
Good.
Boo.
It was my favourite film of 2016, and I do truly believe it's cinema at its finest. It was so nice to go in the cinema and be entertained and be reminded of what cinema used to be like, you know, when I was a kid back in the 50s and the 60s, you know.
Yeah. How old are you?
Damien Chazelle is a genius, and Ben, I know you're not a massive fan of La La Land, but Whiplash... Why are you laughing? Did I say his name wrong already?
No, it's just you did it. He's a personal friend of mine. He's a genius.
Damien Chazelle is a genius. But let's be honest about it. Whiplash, you enjoyed.
I loved Whiplash.
Yeah.
Yeah, more than enjoy. I thought it was a fantastic movie.
And First Man wasn't bad when the moments were in space.
Yeah, all the stuff on Earth was boring, but everything in space was pretty cool.
But we all admit here that Ryan Gosling is a great actor and Emma Stone is an incredible actress, and together their chemistry, when we first saw it in Crazy Stupid Love, you knew they were going to be a hit together. So the moment I knew that they were cast in this, I didn't need to worry. I just thought, well, if they're in the safe hands of Damien Chazelle, who is a personal friend of mine, on the set of this is brilliant, and all the original music and everything is fantastic. But Gemma, as we've both got it,
yeah,
I'm going to pass you it for a bit, otherwise I'm going to leave you with nothing.
Oh, bless you. Well, it's clearly influenced by the golden age of Hollywood, so the likes of Fred Astaire's choreography to the sizzling chemistry you see from Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman in Casablanca. and it's beautifully illustrated with the musical numbers in the film. Sorry, Ben. Hey, Mark, let's talk. So my favourite personal number is A Lovely Night. So it's most notable with the purple Hollywood skyline and the distinctive yellow dress that Mark would call iconic, which it is.
Yes.
But the sequence harkens back to a sequence that you would see in Singing in the Rain, you know, where the lyrics and the choreography mirror the present relationship between Mia and Sebastian. You know, both are unsure of each other's motives and what they really think of each other, but by the end of the number, it's very clear that they're drawn to each other. And despite them being chalk and cheese, which they are, the attraction between them is completely undeniable. It's also reflected in City of Stars.
That's a great song.
Oh my God, it breaks my heart every single time, where we see the differences between them and their paths to success starts to create friction. And it was a bold move by Damien Chazelle, especially being his second film, but mine and Mark's choice.
It's a great film.
It is.
I would agree with you if they just get rid of all the singing.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I could do an edit. I could chop out all the musical numbers and it could just be like an hour film. It would be quite a nice romantic film.
That'd be perfect. I think it's incredibly well made. I think it's beautifully shot, beautifully acted. I can't fault it from a feat of filmmaking perspective. I just don't like the damn music.
There we go.
Ryan Gosling can sing, though. Fair play to him. And that audition scene that Mia goes through, that's when you realise that she deserves every award ever. Oh. People that say, oh, she's only good in stuff like Superbad. No, she's an absolute outstanding actress.
Who said that?
One guy once on a bus. I don't know his name, but he annoyed me.
I heard him say it. And
I want to call
away.
Him out for this moment. But a lot of people don't rate her as much as they should. She's absolutely fantastic. I watched The Favourite recently. I've just seen it.
Oh, so good.
She's incredible.
Amazing.
Yeah. Also noted, that song, the audition song, she got an Oscar for Best Original Song for that.
Wow. Mm. There you go. I think we need to move on soon because I can see Ben getting angry because this is a proper musical.
Yeah, Ben is slowly creating scratch marks in his table as we speak.
Well, my first pick, it's very similar, actually. It's Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny.
Yes!
Have you both seen Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny?
Yes, of course.
Oh, it's a magnificent film. So it stars Jack Black and Kyle Gass, who, of course, are Tenacious D, the self-described greatest band in the world. And they go on a quest in search of The Pick of Destiny, which is a plectrum made from the tooth of Satan that transforms its users into rock legends. The film got absolutely shitty reviews. And it was a colossal bomb, grossing only $8 million in the US, which was less than half its budget. The truth is, if you're a fan of the D, as I am, you will love this film. If you aren't, you probably won't. It's not for you, to be fair. But the film's full of comedy ringers, all pals of Black and Gas, like Ben Stiller's in there, John C. Reilly, Amy Poehler pops up. And it's silly and dumb, just as you would expect coming from those guys, but it's funny. And most importantly, for what is supposedly a musical, it has some killer tunes. The opening number, Kickapoo, is a work of genius. It's this rock opera style tune about the young JB discovering metal and deciding to leave home to become a rock star. And it features Meatloaf as JB's dad and also Ronnie James Dio as himself, who inspires Jack on his journey. And then there's the equally brilliant closing number, Beelzebos.
Yes.
Which is where JB and KG take on Satan himself in a rock-off. And Satan here is played by Dave Grohl.
If you want someone to play the devil, you've got to have Dave fucking Grohl.
There's your man. And the songs work perfectly within the context of the film, but the soundtrack album works just as well as an individual album on its own. It's probably my favourite of all the Tenacious D records. There are so many great songs on it, but it's a brilliant film. It's the kind of film that's, not that I would ever advocate this, but if you're under the influence of certain substances, you'd bloody love.
You'd bloody love that.
Like sherbet and dib dabs.
I'd probably stay off the sherbet, Gemma.
Yeah.
I was on about the pink lemonade sherbet. Okay. What are you guys on about?
Yes, exactly that.
But it's a fantastic film and I bloody love it. And it is a musical.
It is.
Because it's not just them performing songs on stage. So a lot of people, I think, wanted to have Spinal Tap, didn't they, in their pictures?
Yeah.
I wouldn't count that as a musical because every time we hear a song, it's them on stage performing it.
Exactly.
So that's just a film with concert footage, effectively. But this, they integrate the songs within the storyline. So I consider this a musical.
Well,
Do you agree?
Hence the genre.
I'm just take off Almost Famous.
Okay, yeah.
Does not count.
And Jaws.
£10, yeah. £10 Jaws on there.
What people don't realise is, because Jack Black's known as a comedian now and an actor, is how talented he is as a songwriter.
Oh, God, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a damn good singer. Really good. Even School of Rock and stuff like that, you can actually hear him sing properly. But he actually writes and plays good songs on the guitar.
Yeah, he does. He's an incredible musician, but especially his voice. His vocal range is incredibly impressive. Some of the notes he can hit are crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw them at Reading
a number
of years ago, and it was brilliant. They had a big inflatable Satan emerge from the stage at one point, but they're great. They're a blast.
That would have been around the same time I saw them at Brixton Academy, because they had the same thing. Was it kind of half inflated when you saw it?
It was.
Very Spinal Tap.
Very.
We've just missed them. I think they played here last month. Yeah. I'm annoyed because I haven't heard anything new from them, but I just want to see them live. I've never actually seen them on a stage. So
their most recent record wasn't great, to be fair, but they put on a hell of a live show. I'd happily go and see them again.
Tenacious D.
If you're listening. Yes.
Hello.
They will be.
Howdy.
Let's throw this back around to Mark then.
Right. My next one is Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, the South Park movie.
Thank God he said South Park.
Yeah, I've got it too.
Yes. For me, if you want to write a song for a film, and it can be classed as a musical, you do not get better than Uncle Fucker.
Shut your fucking face, Uncle Fucker.
You're cuck-sucking, Uncle Fucker.
Suck my balls.
It's a very simple story. Cartman and his friends basically go off to see this R-rated movie of Terrence and Philip.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy. But Terrence and Philip, the movie, is so offensive, it causes basically them to blame the whole of Canada. Their parents are furious. So what happens? We get Saddam Hussein involved. We get the devil, who are gay lovers.
Yeah.
Spoiler if you didn't know that in real life. And I don't know. South Park, for an hour and a half, is a dream to me. I think it's a show that never really got stale. The Simpsons now is absolute gash.
Yeah.
Series 47 million or whatever it's on. I don't care. It's on Sky. It looks wrong. I can't be arsed with it. South Park, because they can write it and turn it around and keep it so present, I love it. To know they did a film like Beavis and Butthead, which also worked, I was in my element. I absolutely loved it. I think that the whole songs, is it the Small Mountain Town, I think, the intro song is brilliant. But it's just an extended episode. They don't try and go up on one like the Simpsons movie and try and make it too over the top. It's just an extended episode, and I fucking love it from start to finish.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. It perfectly walks that line between stupid toilet humour and clever satire, which is precisely what South Park has always done. As you say, it is just an elongated episode. Some of the other songs you've mentioned there, Small Mountain Town and Uncle Fucker. You've got What Would Brian Boitano Do? And Carl's Mom's a Bitch.
Yes. Oh,
Carl's Mom's a Bitch is a big fat bitch, the biggest bitch in the whole wide world. And of course, Blame Canada. Now, Blame Canada was extraordinarily nominated for the Oscar for Best Original Song.
I didn't know this.
Did you not know this, right? No. And it was amazing. And Trey Parker and Matt Stone had to come up with a way of performing this on stage. So who did they get? Robin Williams. Mark's look, I can't believe you didn't know this. When you go home, get on YouTube and watch Robin Williams performing this at the Oscars. He had to censor the swear words, which is ironic because the whole point of the film is about the dangers of censorship. And the Oscars made them censor the lyrics live. They didn't win, sadly.
Aww.
But the fact that this was nominated and they got to perform it on the grand stage, that's amazing, isn't it?
Mm. I might be wrong, did they turn up in dresses?
Yes,
to the
they
awards?
Did. Yes.
I remember the iconic photos.
Jennifer Lopez
and
dress.
And Gwyneth Paltrow pink ruffle.
And they've admitted they were high as fuck on LSD when they were there.
Wow. They're good guys, aren't
They're
they?
They're amazing. I love them. And they've always been really big on musical numbers. The show was littered with them over the years. They're such musical nerds, Parker especially, that apparently, I wouldn't know this myself, but something I read is that many of the songs in the film were done in the style of several big Broadway songs. So some of the songs are in the style of Oklahoma, some in the style of South Pacific, and film musicals like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Having never seen these things myself, I can't give you a frame of reference, but apparently true. And they even went as far as creating their own Broadway musical in the multi-award winning Book of Mormon.
And it's amazing.
Everyone I know that's seen it said it's killer.
It's brilliant and it's hilarious. It's genuinely funny. Mm-hmm. And the amount of stuff that they get away with in that show is shocking, but you wouldn't have it any other way.
And I cannot believe that the film is 20 years old.
Lordy Lord.
I remember vividly being in the cinema watching it with my ex-girlfriend who was not remotely interested and didn't speak to me for a couple of days afterwards.
To the curb, mate.
Is that why you broke up?
One of the reasons.
Yeah, Jesus.
My favourite song is up there. The Satan Ballad.
He
dreams of, you know, escaping the shackles of hell to be up on earth. Kind of like, and again, the Little Mermaid reference.
It's that kind of
shit that they create so well.
It is. It's still good now as well. When I see it on Comedy Gold or whatever channel, it's not Comedy Gold, it's Comedy Central, I'll always watch it. I think they're still on form now.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it in maybe 10 years until I watched it the other day, and I was amazed at how many of the lines I remembered. I was just saying the lines along with the film. I must have watched this film 20 times back in the day, but hadn't seen it in a while. Hey, relax, guy. Everything out of Saddam's mouth cracks me up.
It's amazing. Mr. Garrison was one of my favourites.
But isn't there the song where it's like, cheer up, you gotta go do it, guys.
Mrs. Chokes on Dick.
Yeah.
Some great characters. I had all the figures as well. It's like, I remember being at college. No, was it school? It must have been 20 years
ago. Yeah, it would have been. Yeah.
All my pocket money was going on those things. All the money I earned from my part-time job, it was those figures, those plushies.
Yes,
you used
to get. I had a plush stand.
Oh, I had all the videos.
Amazing. Did you get the videos in Germany?
Yeah.
I didn't imagine, like,
it wasn't
not
in German.
That'd be the worst thing ever.
Like, I've been had. Buddy.
Are you allowed to now talk? Have you got a choice?
I guess so. You two are going to hate this, but I don't care because it's my choice. Mary Poppins.
Ugh. Mary Poppins.
Julie Andrews plays the magical nanny to look after the kids, Jane and Michael Banks. And if I'm to be honest, you probably may have guessed this. I grew up on musicals, you know. At the time, they were fun, they were imaginative, and they were a really great way to escape from school, homework, and tidying up around the house and bedroom.
And the communists of East Germany.
Oh, we had to find a way to make the time pass. But Mary Poppins was a film that really kind of allowed me to exit that room of reality and dive into a world of, like, dancing penguins, floating tea parties, and chimney sweeping. And hey, we had a lot of fun back in Germany, don't get me wrong.
God damn.
But the songs still stand out as being instantly recognisable. You say the word supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, Mark. Go!
Never happening. Not happening at all.
But that's a prime example. It's a made-up word that, in order to remember how to say it, you have to sing it. And when joy is present in the film, so is pain. You know, it's not all about, you know, chirpy cockneys having a great old time jumping into paintings. No, no, no. The song that affects me the most that represents this is Feed the Birds.
Yeah.
Anybody that knows this film will agree with me and say it kicks you in the love nuts straight away. When I first watched it as a kid, I thought it was a lullaby to soothe the kids to bed and to sleep and off to dreamland. But actually, it's so much more about that. It's this little old lady who's feeding the birds on the cathedral steps. And these birds are only being alive because of this lady. And this lady finds comfort in the birds. And then later on in the film, she's no longer there. And neither are the birds. Because,
spoiler.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the whole point. This is the whole heartbreak of the song. And I think it's one of those beautiful melodies that I think when Walt Disney heard it, he just instantly fell into a cacophony of tears. He's like, this is amazing. We're going to make lots and lots of money. Don't know why he sounded like someone from the Untouchables.
Sounds like Vince McMahon.
Does the swagger into the office. But it's a real snapshot of my childhood. I absolutely love this film. I know that you guys aren't the fans, but hey, it's my top three.
Hang on, you don't know. Yeah. Ben might love it.
Well, do you know what, Gemma? I'm going to shock you. I don't hate this film.
Really?
Because it does remind me of my childhood. I remember watching this and Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
I love Bedknobs and
Broomsticks. Yeah, I remember those being on quite a bit as a child and not hating them.
Yeah, or Jessica Fletcher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm blown away, Ben. I actually can't believe you watched them. I'll be completely honest.
You must have seen Mary Poppins at some point in your life.
Mate, every Christmas it's on BBC One.
It's a staple. It's a staple of that time where innocence was thinking about, you know, what you're going to get for sweets the next day rather than, oh shit, my council tax is about to leave my account.
Yeah.
It's when everything around here was all fields and you could leave your door unlocked.
Yeah.
Because your neighbours weren't paedophiles, whereas they all are now.
Exactly.
All of them, that's all I've heard.
Yeah. And when my granddad used to pick up the phone, he'd just say, 747. That's all he'd say.
Oh my God.
Because it's the last bit of his number.
That is so cute.
That's amazing, isn't it? So
352189.
And then when my mum had dropped me home, she'd ring and basically hang up after two just to let me know I'm
home.
Give
me two rings. Yeah.
That's what it's all about. You say to someone now, give me two rings. They're going to be a pedo and they're going to take advantage of that. definitely give you two rings. And I don't want that. And that's not safety. So get the pedos off the streets.
My God!
Yes.
This has become a public service announcement about paedophiles.
You know what? I rescind my choice of Mary Poppins. Can I just say South Park?
But this will go on nicely from pedos. Do you want to know my next choice?
God,
why not?
I can't wait.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
It's my choice too.
Yes! This will shock you both, right? When I was a child...
What? You were a child?
This is true.
You're like 85,000 years old.
I used to enjoy reading books.
Fuck off.
I'm not lying.
That's a lie. That is a lie, sir.
Willy Wonka's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, by Roald Dahl, was one of my favourites. It didn't have that many pictures in either. That and Stig of the Dump.
That was good.
Was a good book.
Yeah.
And I think there was something about a dinosaur. Like, it's not Denver.
Barney.
It's Denver. Denver the dinosaur.
That's a cartoon, you fool.
Oh, shit. That's where it all went wrong. All those cartoons weren't books. Bollocks. Now you know why I can't read.
Yeah.
But anyway, I've got good cartoon knowledge.
Good.
This film was great. And you know my love for sweets. That started many years ago. For a 1971 film, to know I was born in 1982, my parents waited a while. Because it's a bit of a dark film, isn't it? You know, as nice as it is, you don't want to be trapped in a TV like Mike TV. You don't want to turn into a big purple round sort of fruit and start rolling. And you definitely don't want... You definitely don't want geese to like put you down this little sort of chute. You just don't want it. Any of that stuff. It doesn't sound scary now when I'm at this age, but as a kid, it was terrifying. Being trapped in that chocolate tunnel.
That
was bad.
I'm not touching that one.
No.
That's what she said.
Anyway, get your hands off my chocolate tunnel and let me finish. Right, listen, this film
I will
is
not
great.
Have a chocolate tunnel banded about
this podcast.
Willy nilly.
And I did genuinely buy a lot of chocolate bars hoping to find that golden ticket. Because as a kid, you believed you could hopefully one day meet Willy Wonka. And I never did. And that depresses me now. Yeah. And I don't want to talk about the remake with bloody Johnny Depp.
No, let's just stop then.
It's crap. The original, Gene Wilder, absolutely amazing. From the moment he comes on, the songs, Oompa Loompa, Tippity-Doo.
I wasn't ready for that.
That's a good little tune. I like that one. And it was probably the only thing I could scrape in to make free musicals. Because I've not seen all the big ones that everyone's going on social. I've just not. So I was like, if I can get that in there, I like that film. Gemma, you've chosen it as well.
I did.
Gemma, you've chosen it as well.
Yeah.
Help me out, because I don't want to steal all the limelight from you. Why else do you love this film in Germany?
Well, the chocolate.
Yeah.
I too did that. Da-doi. I also did that thing where, you know, if you got a Kit Kat and then you'd slowly open the wrapper hoping there was like a bit of gold in there. I was disappointed 10 out of 10 times. It was devastating. However, the song and dance numbers are captivating. You know, you've got the bright-eyed, optimistic song, I've Got a Golden Ticket, that makes you feel like anything's possible under circumstances like poverty and hardship. You've got I Want It Now, emphasising the opposite end of that spectrum with Veruca, a girl so spoilt and self-obsessed that her demands are ultimately her undoing of her character. But the real heart, the real focus of why this film is so wonderful is the song Pure Imagination.
Mm-hmm.
It's the scene where Gene Wilder opens the doors and the children see the chocolate factory for the first time. You know, they see these oversized lollipops. They see, you know, gardens of fruit and sweets. They see the chocolate river. They see everything that, as a kid, you want to see and you want to be there for. And his vocals too, they're childlike, they're innocent, but at the same time they're tinged with sadness, because as the film goes on you realise that he wants to bequeath his fortunes and his legacy to somebody that he can trust, and all throughout his life he hasn't been able to do that. Even watching this now, you know, I watch this film a night, you know, every night, you know, what can I say? I bloody love it, you know. But it's a film that makes you feel like a child all over again. It really is just such a wonderful way to introduce, you know, old generations, new generations, current generations to this film.
The way you were talking then, it was like you were describing Michael Jackson. It was, genuinely. It was, it really was. He wants to give his fortunes away, lives in this big place.
Yeah.
Loves kids. Yeah,
that's
good.
Wow.
Yes, that I suppose that is one way of looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this film. And to be honest, I never think of it in my head as being a musical. It is. There are musical numbers spread throughout it. I just think of it as being a great classic kids film.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful film.
It just has so much heart to it. And there's nothing that I can think of in terms of a children's musical film that even comes close to this, which is a real shame.
But I always wanted the wallpaper in my room that you could just go and lick.
The snazberries?
Yeah.
It's like snazberries.
That was great. But yeah, that was what I always wanted growing up. I always wanted that gobstopper that tasted like a three-course roast dinner or whatever.
Yeah,
remember, it's like a taste of the breakfast and this and that.
But then,
brilliant.
But then again, she kind of turned into a blueberry.
It's a small sacrifice to make.
Yeah. We've all got our vices.
It. Yeah. Come on then, Ben. As always, finish me off.
Will do. My final one is, I would say, my most traditional musical. It's The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Aww.
It's a lovely film. It's a festive classic about the king of Halloween Town, Jack Skellington, finding his way into Christmas Town and then trying to get the citizens of Halloween Town to adopt the Christmas spirit. And it's always thought of as being a Tim Burton film because it was called at the time Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
But he came up with the story and produced it. It was actually directed by a chap called Henry Selick, who also directed Coraline. People tend to overlook his achievements within this, you know, how responsible he was for it. One of the things that I love about this film is that it's stop motion. Stop motion animation is timeless. You wouldn't know to look at it this film was 26 years old.
Not
it could have been made this year, it could have been made 50 years ago.
Yeah.
That's why I love stop motion animation so much. It just doesn't date. And this is one of the best examples of it. I love the gothic visuals and the character design, especially Sally with her ragdoll Frankenstein's monster hybrid, and Oogie Boogie, who's just a big burlap sack full of bugs, and then all the other various monsters and demons that inhabit Halloween Town. Presumably you guys have seen this film.
Many times.
Every year I see this.
Yeah.
And of course, as we're talking about musicals, we've got to talk about some of the songs. The songs are from the great Danny Elfman, who is a genius.
He's
done soundtracks for things like the Batman and Batman Returns films. He created the theme song for The Simpsons.
Yep.
That gets him a lifetime pass
How much money he gets off that?
I wonder if he does. Because if he were to get money every time an episode of that is played, he'd be the richest man in the world.
I bet you any money he's got like Scrooge McDuck's like pool full of golden coins.
Yeah, and he's just diving into it.
I would totally do that if I was him.
Hell yeah.
Or when it happened, he got shafted and was like, we probably won't take off this series, so here's 100 quid and that's it. And he'd be like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, I bet he's regretting that decision now. Yeah. But going back to the songs in this film, I think my favourite ones are What's This?
Yeah.
It's the song that Jack sings when he first arrives in Christmastown, and Kidnap the Sandy Claws, which I think is an absolute, absolute work of genius. So much so that the band Korn did a cover of Kidnap the Sandy Claws, which is absolutely brilliant. If you've not heard this, go and check out this version. It's killer. It's one of my favourite Korn songs.
That's incredible.
And it's a cover of a song from The Nightmare Before Christmas. I don't think necessarily there should be a sequel to this film. I think it's perfect in and of itself. But there's so much possibilities open to it, because when we first see Jack find the doorway into Christmas Town, there are also doors to Easter Town, Thanksgiving Town, Valentine's Day Town. So there's so much there that they could explore.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to see what the animators could do with those particular regions, although I don't necessarily want to see a sequel to the film.
They would probably put CGI as well now. They wouldn't take the time it needs.
Mm-hmm.
That's a shame, really. What you're saying, though, like, it's still an important film now.
Mm.
Like, if I go to the Disney store to try and get my niece stuff for Christmas and stuff like that,
they've
always got loads of Nightmare Before Christmas stuff now.
That's true.
And you don't get stuff like Finding Nemo toys now, which is only, 10 years ago?
Yeah, well, he's been found, though.
So. but you don't, do you? I hate this, I always say this, but they are iconic characters.
They are.
They come out every year. Everyone wants a Jack Skeleton. Everyone. The Funkos are still coming out now with all these great characters.
I love the mayor, where he's got the happy face, and then when he's like anxious or stressed or angry, his face turns automatically. And again, it's kind of a really cool metaphor of politics, because you know, politicians have so many faces. It's brilliant. It's such a good representation.
It is brilliant. And it's not just the toys that people are after. I've seen no end of people with tattoos,
Jack
Skeleton faces on their arms,
Sally,
and stuff. All the time.
Always a fancy dress party. There's always someone dressed up in that as well.
Rightfully so.
I love it.
It is a rightly iconic and memorable film, and always worth a watch.
Are we done already?
I think we are done.
Sorry about the crossovers. We knew it was going to happen. There's always going to be crossover.
Well, fortunately for us, social media have come through with some excellent choices. Mm-hmm. So Twitter, we're going to go there first. David Oakes at DavidOakes8 said, Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
Bugsy Malone.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen that, I don't think.
It's all right. And Sing Street.
That's a relatively new one, isn't it?
It is indeed. And you can say it's kind of a musical too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a really good film too. Inspector Lagrasse at Inspector Bumble said Les Miserables.
Shame.
The Phantom of the Opera and Little Shop of Horrors.
See, that's very good.
That's a great shout. Yeah.
Beat Miss Seymour.
And it's Rick Moranis.
It is indeed. Laurel Nevans at Laurel Nev said West Side Story.
Yeah.
Once.
That's another relatively new
one,
isn't it? Once.
And again, Irish one too, same with Sing Street.
Yeah.
And Tommy.
Oh, the
Who, yeah.
The Who.
Exactly.
Very nice.
The first one, West Side Story. I'm sure I read the other day that Steven Spielberg's remaking, isn't he?
Your boy starring in it too.
Who?
Ansel Elgort.
Oh, fuck that. Skip.
Yeah.
And then Emma at Pop Rock Geek said, The Sound of Music. It's not for me, personally. I can understand why people would choose it, but for me, it's...
That's what I think of musical, though. That's the first sort of film.
She also said Oliver, which is a good film. It's like that's like 3 days long, though, Mark. I don't know if you'd survive it.
Bother. It's always on at Christmas. Yeah. Musicals at Christmas, worst thing ever. It is. I want Only Fools and Horses.
Okay.
Or Die Hard, or Gremlins.
Well, until we come up with an Only Fools and Horses top three, we're going with the musicals. She also said High Society. I think that's a bit of a classic one. Then Facebook, John Wimmer said La La Land. He said Hedwig and the Angry Inch. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's
I've not seen that.
Oh, it's very, very cool. And Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Ashley Collins. Oh, Shame. The Greatest Showman. I'm sorry. I just don't get it. I don't get the popularity. But
it was immensely popular, though,
wasn't
it?
People love it. People still love it. But for me, I'd take a hard pass.
He's touring now and doing songs from that. And people are selling out arenas to go and see it. So it must be doing something good.
I'll tell you what. Because Hugh Jackman has banked so much goodwill from playing Wolverine all these years and Prisoners, he can just about... Yeah. Get away with it. He's got a lot of black in his column, so there's not enough red to wipe out all the black.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, Ashley also said Calamity Jane, very, very good film, and Chicago.
Yeah, I remember watching that and liking it to a degree because John C. Reilly's in it. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Mm. Yeah, Andy Strange Brew O'Neill, that's a hell of a mouthful, said The Book of Life, Muppets Christmas Carol, and South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
Yeah.
The Muppets films are good. The most recent one, not the second one, the first one.
Brett McKenzie from Flight of the Conchords wrote a song for that and won an Oscar.
He did.
There you go. They're not bad.
They're not bad. Then finally over to Instagram, we got Tam, Liz and O'Driscoll again. Wow, what's the long names, guys? At Tam Leonard said Grease, Rock of Ages and Mamma Mia.
My mum loves Mamma Mia, and there was a second one, and she went on the opening night. Absolutely fucking loves these films.
I think all mums love Mamma Mia.
Trash.
Wow! But how do you really feel?
I don't get it. Grease is a good one. I don't mind Grease. If Grease is on telly, I'll leave it on.
Hey, Grease 2. Yes.
No, cash in.
Masterpiece.
Cash grab.
One of the greatest films of all times.
Remake it with Corey. I'll watch it.
Now we're talking. But as ever, thank you very much, social media, and as always, keep them coming in.
I believe it's my topic choice
next. Is it?
A couple of episodes back, Ben was talking all about Leonardo DiCaprio and the fact that you never liked him.
I didn't used to, that's true.
And then you watched Catch Me If You Can, and he won you over. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's a good topic. All about actors that basically turned us around, won us over, changed our opinion.
No.
So on the next episode, we'll come back with our top three performances that won us over.
You gonna be the next Iron Man now?
Well, no, I don't have time. I'm too busy doing your jobs.
What?
I'm kidding. Look, keep up the good work.
Because I am going on vacation.
Peter Parker returns in Spider-Man Far From Home. Our friendly neighbourhood superhero decides to join his best friends, Ned, MJ and the rest of the gang on a European vacation. However, Peter's plan to leave superheroics behind for the next few weeks are scrapped when he begrudgingly agrees to help Nick Fury undercover the mystery of several elemental creature attacks. I definitely wrote this, you can tell, can't you? Creating havoc across the continent. As always, guys, you know by now, skip the end, talk about the plot. We talk about huge parts of the film that will spoil it if you've not seen it. So I advise you now to go and watch the film in your local cinema. Come back and we'll be waiting with our amazing review in the next few moments. Right then, gang, this is the big one. This is the first Marvel film for 3 days, as Ben said at the start. It's a big, big moment. I want to throw it straight to you, Ben. How was this for you?
I thought it was a hell of a lot of fun. I thought it was a nice, light-hearted and action-packed film. And it was a palate cleanser after the drama and the darkness of Endgame, much like Ant-Man 2 was a light palate cleanser after Infinity War. I dug it.
Beautifully said. And now to you, Gemma.
I tell you what, this film gave me the Peter tingles. I believe it was better than Homecoming.
Ooh, big words.
Tom Holland is the definitive Spider-Man.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And absolutely what Ben said, that light heart feel that we needed after the events that happened at Endgame was given to us on a platter. Also has one of the most amazing sequences I've seen probably in all year, but we'll get to that later.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. It's all good so far. I'll say this now, I didn't absolutely love this film, but I really fucking enjoyed it and liked it for what it was. But I wasn't coming out the cinema like I did for the most recent Avengers and stuff like that, where I was absolutely buzzing and couldn't wait to go and see it again. Don't get me wrong, it's spectacular to look at, which you've just mentioned, we'll get to that. Tom Holland is the actual Spider-Man for me. No one else has now got any worth for him.
It's on his passport.
And it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed it, but I want to get into the nuts and the cracks of this one.
Oh. Get into the cracks, he says. Yeah.
Where your waders.
So let's get straight involved with the man himself, who I've just bigged up quite a lot, Thomas Holland.
Thomas.
Yes.
That's his church Thomas. Name, his Sunday name.
Yes.
The third.
Yes, I absolutely love him. And I agree with you when you say he's kind of the definitive Spider-Man now. And he's actually done more Spider-Man movies than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Garfield did 2. Tobey Maguire did 3. Tom Holland has now appeared in 5 movies as Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. So he is Spider-Man to me, and he's the only one I've genuinely, truly enjoyed. Never been a big fan of the character. Never read Spider-Man comics, never really cared. But he's brought me around. I think he's fantastic. And he manages to walk a very, very fine line between boyish charm and also feeling like a genuine superhero, like an adult man. And it's a very tricky skill to pull off, and I think he's pulled that off better than anyone to don that outfit before.
If you think back to when we were first introduced to him in Civil War, he was really, really kind of like this young gun, plucky kid that was so excited to be wearing the spider suit. And 5 films later, we're seeing a sense of maturity. We're seeing him actually grow up into the man that he is destined to become while still retaining those awkward, dorky teenage moments that every teenage kid goes through. He's so lovable, and you want to cheer for him. You want him to do well. You want him to succeed.
Mm-hmm. I love the constant reminders he is still a child. So in moments when you see him on the spacecraft and you see him kind of getting all excited with the toys again, and he's playing with some of Iron Man's gadgets, and you start thinking, that's how we would be.
Hell
if we got to try on that glove and try on some of the armor and go in all this computer and start designing your outfit, you go straight back to a 12-year-old. You want the colors, the designs.
And
that's the nice little reminders you always get throughout these films to remind you, actually, he's not an adult. He's still a kid, and he's at school with his mates, but he's also got the power to be the biggest thing on the planet.
It's really good. And the way he interacts with other characters in this film, I think, is really important, because he's lost his mentor figure. Tony's dead. Tony's gone. Spoiler alert if you haven't seen Endgame. Sorry. You know, you're an idiot if you haven't. What are you listening to this for? Ridiculous. But they've had to create new relationships for him within this film. And the two main ones are his relationship with Nick Fury, which we'll discuss momentarily, and his relationship with Mysterio, played by Jake Gyllenhaal.
Also Happy.
And Happy Hogan,
Happy is certainly thawed from when we first saw him. You know, he was very cold. He was, you know, he didn't want anything to do with the kid. But now he really wants to be there for him. It doesn't help that he's banging his aunt.
Yes, I don't think Peter's too pleased about
No, I wouldn't be.
She is.
Banging his aunt.
<That's it>.
Brilliant. But going on to Jake Gyllenhaal, I love the relationship that he has with Spider-Man initially, Mysterio, when we, spoiler alert again, where we think at first that Mysterio is a good guy.
Yeah.
And he has that kind of like a relationship that Tony had with him, but he's more like a friendly uncle, a nice uncle, and he's, you know, he understands him, whereas Nick Fury doesn't necessarily understand him. And I thought that was beautiful, which makes it all the more powerful when it gets thrown out the window and we realise he was just playing him all along and he's a bad guy.
Also, can I just add, Jake Gyllenhaal freaking bought it. As the villain.
He was having a blast, wasn't he?
He was having so much fun, and I loved how he switched from being this, it's almost like brooding superhero 101 rules, you know, like had the catchphrases like, oh, I'm doing this for my wife and kids, you know, oh man, we gotta be the bad guys, when it's all just smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
And he's a nut job.
He looked like he was having fun as well. You know, he does a lot of serious roles. We've seen him in stuff like Nightcrawler when he's so serious, his eyes and everything, he's creepy. In this, he was enjoying himself, not in the way of Prince of Persia where he's been enjoying himself for the paycheck. He's enjoying himself and actually putting some effort in. But I didn't know he was going to be the whole villain. I didn't know, because I don't read about
it.
I didn't have any spoilers.
See, that's interesting to me, because I know the character of Mysterio from the comics, so I know he's a villain, and I know that he's a master of illusion, so I saw that coming. So as brilliant as it was when he turned, I wasn't surprised by it. But were you guys surprised by it?
Very. I kind of hope that this is where I think the film lacks something. I think we needed a big villain. Even though Mysterio turned into one, I wanted him to be fighting a huge villain for like Sandman or something for a while. And then we had that big battle and then he turned. I was kind of lacking these little, small, little villains that didn't really give a shit for. I wanted the big story to be a villain. So considering he was a friend at the start, the film starts with him being a hero, helping each other defeat this monster. I was a bit let down because I was like, well, you've turned to the villain now and the whole focus is you for the whole film. I wanted that third part of the triangle.
See, I kind of felt the other way.
Okay.
I thought the bit of them fighting the fake villains at the start went on too long.
Okay.
I wish they'd have got to the reveal quicker and it would have been more about Mysterio.
That's fair.
But you got to remember the rules of villain versus superhero. When is a superhero wearing green? It's all in the colours. Green is an evil colour. Green is villainous. So I had an inkling that something was going to happen, like the old switcheroo, like the heel turn. But having it, a heel turn in a way where he's a misunderstood genius and his real weapon is conviction. It's the whole way of trying to talk some around to your way of thinking. Again, it's the whole smoke and mirrors. That's his weapon. It's not rays. It's not spiderwebs. It's not a hammer. That's the scariest superpower that a villain could have.
And the thing that I thought was quite marvellous is that the whole film is very meta. The whole thing is about the concept of blockbuster filmmaking. So you had him, Mysterio. He was the director. He was showing everyone what to do. And he had his crew. He had a film crew.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not only was he the director, he was the star of the action.
Yeah.
Then he had his special effects team, the guys creating the illusions. Then he had his writer who was coming up with his heroic quips. He even had a costume lady, you know, getting steaming out the creases in his cape. It was a brilliant bit of satire, I suppose, if you like, but commentary on the concept of blockbuster filmmaking, and to use your phrase there, Gemma, to show how it is all smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so clever.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very clever, not like belittling Marvel, because they're absolute geniuses, but we do normally just get the start, hero, meets villain defeated, and because we got all these twisted, like, heel turn, which we talked about, and then the story, you'd be getting into one part, and we'll get to this, but then there's a massive, oh, I didn't see that coming, that was a big, that's good, it was intelligent writing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but and leading on to possibly the highlight of the whole entire film, the trip to Berlin, the hallucinogenic scene where Mysterio really messes with Peter Parker's brain. And I think it certainly took inspiration from Dr. Strangelove, visual metaphors, even like surreal art like René Magritte. It's a 2-minute treat to fully immerse yourself and just get as lost as Peter does.
Did you mean Doctor Strange or Doctor Strangelove?
Did I say Doctor Strangelove?
You did, yeah. That would have been good.
That would have been amazing. Just get someone riding on a missile. No, Doctor Strange, that was my bad.
We said the exact same thing when we came out, and we commented to each other that we wished for once we'd actually gone to the 3D showing.
Yeah,
because that would have
too.
Looked great the same way Doctor Strange did in 3D.
It was incredible. I was, the whole scene, I just thought, okay, well, this is over. They're going to move on. But then they pull the rug underneath our feet again, and it just goes on into this funnel of madness, and it's almost trying to convince Peter that he is going mad.
Yeah.
He ends up getting hit by a train, which is a little bit bad, but never mind. Even the special nod to seeing Tony Stark as Iron Man come back, and then just seeing him as this zombie kind of like crawling out to him.
It's so trippy, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a nod to Marvel Zombies.
Yeah, definitely.
But it is mind-blowing, that whole entire sequence.
Even going back to the smaller scale elements of the film, I think one of the things that is so good about these Spider-Man films is they don't forget that he is your neighbourhood superhero, and they try and keep it small scale. I love the opening of the film, which is the high school news bulletin that they do, and it's the two guys basically describing the action since the snap, or as they call it, the blip. And it's essentially just an information dump, getting us up to speed on how the whole thing worked, but it's brilliantly done, framed as this high school news report. I thought that was genius.
With Whitney Houston playing in the background. And
that was it, and then you literally had a big battle straight away. Like, here we go, you haven't got a big story, you don't need a backstory here, you've already had, you know who this guy is, and now here's Mysterio.
The first hour of the film, or maybe a bit less, was again like a classic teen high school comedy, before it got into the big superheroics, and I like that. I like that it keeps it small scale, and I never want it to lose that. And my worry now, based on the first credits scene, is that we're going to lose that. So again, if you haven't seen it, shame on you. The first credit scene basically reveals that when Mysterio dies, he'd created an illusion to make it look like Peter had killed him on purpose and set all these drones on London.
Right.
And then J. Jonah Jameson turns up, played by J.K. Simmons.
Amazing.
The whole cinema literally gasped.
Yeah, man.
Everyone.
I thought that was amazing. And then he outs Spider-Man as being Peter Parker.
Yeah.
So the next film, I think we've lost that then.
Yeah.
I don't know how we can have that small scale teen high school comedy thing again when everyone in the world knows Peter Parker is Spider-Man and thinks he's evil.
But you could kind of look at it how, you know, social commentary is played right now with, you know, the vile, bile bullshit of InfoWars that comes out, and it's almost like J. Jonas is going to become this kind of character that is so...
Yeah, I get all that and I appreciate that, but I still think it's taken a dicey turn for the future of the franchise. Within the context of the film, I thought that worked, but for the franchise, I don't know how it's going to work. And it's one of my least favourite tropes. The bad guy's actually a good guy, but everyone thinks he's bad.
Yeah.
It's boring to me. I don't like it.
They've had it in Batman as well, didn't we? Nolan's trilogy, when it all came out, and I was like, oh, we don't need this again.
But then they've got to undo it now. They've got to find a way of how to get it all back to even kilt. And
I'll tell you who I really enjoyed in this film, which I didn't say much in the last film. Ned and MJ. Good friends at school. Mm-hmm. They had bigger parts. Ned was funny. I love the fact he fell in love, got a girlfriend just for the trip. But he was that sort of kind of that comic relief you needed now and then. Yeah. He'd just do stupid stuff on the plane. He'd be messing around. And I enjoyed him. I like his chemistry with Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that now we're actually seeing the romance starting to blossom as well.
And I think MJ's fantastic. Yeah. I think Zendaya to me is the MVP of this and the previous Spider-Man film.
She's incredible.
She's so cool and laid back and chilled, but this time you get to see underneath the surface a little bit. You get to see the vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a great performance from her again.
And again, the chemistry between her and Tom Holland was electric. Mm-hmm. It really worked, and I love how it's not all about, if you remember from the first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, it was God, like, it seems so long ago.
It was, but with them two together, it was instantaneous. It was, you know, swinging from the city and then being completely comfortable, whereas with Zendaya and Tom Holland, she's clinging on to dear life going, I don't like this, I'm never doing this again. And yeah, it just looks so, it's more realistic.
I thought that was genius because it's, as you say, it's kind of the anti-version of what happened in the previous Spider-Man films, but it's also the anti-version of things that happen in Superman. You know, the first time in any Superman film where he takes Lois Lane on a flight and she loves it.
Yeah.
I love the fact that MJ was like, that was horrible, I'm not doing that again. Yeah. That's brilliant. Going back to the ending, one of the things I really didn't like, I think the only thing I actively disliked, is that it turns out at the end of the film that Maria Hill and Nick Fury were not Maria Hill and Nick Fury at all. They were the two Skrull characters that we met in Captain Marvel in disguise. And I get that that's a funny joke. It's like, ha ha ha, that's great. But I think it sells out the character of Nick Fury. No way in hell do I believe that Nick Fury would allow a Skrull to act as him on an important mission where the fate of the world is at stake. It just doesn't seem like something. The Nick Fury we know from a million Marvel films, he would never have done that. And I think they've sold out the character of Nick Fury for the basis of a funny throwaway gag.
Which is right at the very end of the second credit scene, which most people in the cinema, I said to Ben, like, how do people not know after 22 films or whatever it is now that there's actually more credit scenes, like, stick around? Half the cinema was empty.
They really?
Yeah, they left, don't know that.
God.
Yeah, they're just getting up. And
really?
Then you thought after the first one, they went, oh, brilliant, and then walked off. I'm like, no, there's still another one to go.
Like, hold your horses, dears.
Do what we do. We always Google it beforehand to find out, is there one, is there two, is there three, and then we stay for them all.
Also, if you have social media, Marvel usually put out a note and saying, stay at the end, there's credits.
Yeah, if you don't, you're a dickhead.
I am intrigued to see where this takes us in regard to what's upcoming in the Marvel Universe, because usually Marvel will give you their slate of films years in advance, and they haven't been able to do this because they didn't want to give away anything from Endgame or Far From Home. Now that we've seen those two films, surely we're going to get their next slate. It was announced in the last couple of days that Kevin Feige is definitely going to be at Comic-Con this year. Marvel are doing a panel.
Cool.
So that's this month, and then next month is Disney's D23 Expo. So either at Comic-Con or at D23, I reckon we will get the upcoming slate. So we'll get final confirmation of the Black Widow movie, Guardians 3, Black Panther 2, Doctor Strange 2, The Eternals, Shang-Chi, all these the films that have been rumoured, we're going to get the official announcement, I think.
That's quite interesting because this has been the close of Phase 3. Mm-hmm. We're ready for Phase 4, Marvel.
Just hearing Ben read off those films, I'm like, oh, fuck, I forgot about that. There's going to be some good stuff. I think Guardians 3 is one I'm now really looking forward to because now James Gunn's back.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're going to do what the hell they want.
And with Thor in the mix as well.
Oh, as Guardians of the Galaxy!
Oh, or spoiler if you've not seen it.
Oh, sorry. Come on.
Fuck you, you should have seen it by now. Are you ready to score it?
Yeah.
Go on.
Come on then, Ben.
Do you know what? I was going to give it a 7, but I think as I've spoken about it, I've talked myself into an 8.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really did enjoy it. There are a couple of things that didn't quite work for me, but I know on reflection when I watch it again, I'm going to love it just as much as Homecoming. 8.
Beautiful. Gemma?
It was a hoot. I loved it. I can't wait to see this again. I'm very excited. It's an 8.
I'm not on the same page. I'm slightly behind.
Oh, well, fine. Just be like that
so
then.
So for me, it's a 7, but that doesn't alter anything. So Spider-Man Far From Home gets a skip to the end, 8 out of 10. It's competition time!
A plus.
Thank you.
Well done.
That's the best one yet.
Let's have a toast with some cider. Brothers.
Chin chin.
Forever.
Cheers.
That's nice. I said, on a hot summer's day, genuinely, I'm not just plugging, I'm not even mention the name of the cider we had, but cider's the one. I don't want beer, I don't want whiskey, I don't want coffee, it's not, I'll have a cup of tea, it'll cool you down. No, it won't. Cider.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
I was in the pub on Friday night and it was still really close and humid. I was going to have a Guinness. I thought, you know what, I'm going to have a cider.
Yeah.
It's a hot Friday night in the summer, I'm going to have a bloody cider.
And I bet you don't regret that decision.
I don't regret that decision.
And you're
very,
never
very
will.
Happy with my choices.
You never will, Ben.
It's because it's a very crisp beverage.
Mm. It is.
That's cider.
But anyway, brothers, let's get on with this.
You got me.
On the last episode, we reviewed Toy Story 4. And do you know what, guys? I really enjoyed that episode, but I really enjoyed the film as well.
Oh,
I did. Funko came along and gave us an Alien, a Bo Peep, a Buzz, a Woody, and a Jesse Funko Pop. They're very cool. They look good on your desk at work. I think they're acceptable. They're the sort of cool Funkos, not where you've got like every character ever from like Marvel and stuff. Those ones are good. Be honest, iconic.
Yeah.
Buzz Lightyear. I'm blabbering. So, the question we put out there was, who voices Woody?
Thomas Jeffrey Hanks.
It's true. And Laura Rush got that right, so you'll be getting that bundle in the post. We also had six daubs for the exclusive Funko shops for all of the characters from Toy Story 4. The question we put out there was really, really, really simple, was who does the voice for Buzz Lightyear?
So Timothy K. Allen III.
It's not actually, it's just Tim Allen. I'm sorry.
Bullshit.
So you're not going to get the prizes.
I demand a recount.
And Jeremy Summerfield will be getting those in the post. Really cool. And when you get them, as always, post them on social media because we love seeing them on Twitter and Facebook.
But not on eBay.
No, we'll be furious. And finally, for Toy Story, we had one of the pop rides, which is basically Woody with RC in this big little car. So big little car, not little big car, big little car. Real simple question, who directs a Toy Story 4?
Josh Cooley.
It's true, and Michael Winton will be getting that. Not Michael Winslow,
I
that would have been amazing.
Say, do the helicopter noise!
That would be incredible. I bet he loves that. I bet he loves getting people to ask him to do that.
In the middle of the street when he's with his family. Yeah, I bet he loves it.
Bloody loves it. And also, Last Exit came along, and because we had the rewatch of The Fifth Element, they gave us a t-shirt for The Fifth Element.
No.
The question we put out there was, who directed The Fifth Element?
Luc Besson.
He did. That's one of his last decent films.
Yeah.
Shame.
And Boba Crumb will be getting that on Twitter. Lastly, from Last Exit, they gave us a Don't Look Now. It had no relevance to the episode, but it's just a nice new design. Donald Sutherland plays which character in the film Don't Look Now?
Ugh, easy. John Baxter.
Easy.
Duh.
Winner, Ben. You get the t-shirt. Done. Gemma Phillips, you're getting that in the post. Again, get some photos of you on it. Looks good. Can't wait. And finally, we had the last ever pair of Skipfest tickets to give away. Now, what I did ask is people write in and let us know a reason why. Now, what I will do, and this is going to drive the listeners mad, is I'm not going to share the email that came across because it's very personal, but I'll be sharing it with both of you at the end of today's episode.
Okay.
Are there nudie pics?
There's not. That would have easily got them in.
Ben is walking out of the room.
But it's a nice long email which I'll share, and if we read it out, it'll be the rest of the episode, and it's something very personal, so we'll share it.
Okay.
But I'm very glad to announce that David Knapp will be getting that in the post, and you'll be welcome on the night, and we can't wait to have a beer with you.
Spell his name.
K-N-A-P-P.
Knapp.
Okay.
Like Mark Knopfler.
Knapp.
How do you pronounce knife?
Yeah, I need a fork and a knife, please. Please.
He loves that film with Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz, you know, Knight and Day. The Dark Knight Rises.
Knightmare.
Knight Rider.
Brilliant. This is going to haunt me for the rest of the episode, I know now, so fuck off. So what we're going to do is give away some great new prizes.
Yes, please.
Spider-Man, Far From Home. Funko have come along and given us a Spider-Man, an MJ and a Mysterio Pop. That's pretty cool. Let's keep it really simple. In the latest film, we've just reviewed Who Plays Spider-Man.
I know that one.
She's done you there. No, she's stitched you up.
I can't, oh, God.
I'll stop now, don't worry.
You know that we've had quite a lot of suppliers for a long time, and it's always good, but I always think it's fresh. So we've now got Factory Entertainment, which is factoryent.com, have come on board and are going to give us some prizes. Ooh. Moving forward.
Hello.
And because we're masturbating shortly over Steven Spielberg, they've given us a E.T. and Jurassic Park lunchbox metallic tins to give away, which is nice. I always want new prizes, and this is a good one.
Nice.
Who directed E.T.? That's tough.
Who could that be?
Last Exit absolutely spaffed when they heard that we're going to be doing this. They know that Spielberg is a big, big part of film.
That must have been one hell of a cleanup that day.
So check this out. They've doubled their amount of prizes this time. So we've got a Jaws cap. Who plays Quint? Really, really simple, yeah?
Okay.
A Close Encounters t-shirt. Let's say, what year did the film come out?
Uh-huh.
Going to make people work here.
Right.
For Indiana Jones, the Marshall College t-shirt. Who plays Indiana Jones?
Ooh.
That's really good. And because they loved our topic, they've given us a Blues Brothers t-shirt, which I thought we might have had for our musical.
But we didn't.
I was quite surprised. Let's say that Elwood is played by which Ghostbuster?
Nice.
And we're almost there. We've got Richard Sounds have come along and given us some AKG Bluetooth headphones because that's our most popular competition we've ever ran. Because they're just awesome.
Yeah, they're very good.
Ben, you've got some headphones that are wireless.
Hella good, yeah.
It saves time. It saves cables. Listening quality. It's all good. Let's say, and I love this one because it just makes people work, just tweet us your favourite ever movie soundtrack. I love it. I love the time people send gifts, all that sort of stuff. And for iTunes, we're going to make it special. If you leave us a 5-star iTunes rating, we're going to give away a set of Jaws Funko Pops.
Whoa.
Yes! I'm going to be entering that. Yeah. I'm definitely going to be entering that.
You cannot win.
No. But I'm a winner just for being here. So it's all good.
I mean, that's one way of looking at it.
Any more puns to get the knife in or stick the knife in my back?
Mark, I'm spent.
Okay, then.
I need a nap.
Perfect.
Not a knap.
Dickhead. We will come back and announce the winners of all these incredible competitions in 2 weeks' time.
Not this time, girl. Not this time. Not this fucking time. No! No, 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 no!
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot of a director and we talk about our favourite film off their back catalogue. On the last episode, my bloody Jesus God, we chose Steven Spielberg.
Oh, yeah.
The heaviest hitter of all the heavy hitters we've had in the pot. So this one, I don't know about you boys, this was the trickiest one for me as of yet.
Mm. No comment.
Oh.
I think I know what that means.
Such a mysterious guy. Well, for that matter then, I'm going to throw it to Ben first.
Yes.
Ben, your favourite Steven Spielberg film, go on.
One word, one syllable, four letters.
It's not E.T., is
it? It's Jewel. No, it's not. It's Jaws. Of course it's fucking Jaws.
Jewel.
It's the original summer blockbuster and one of the greatest films ever made. Surely one of you or both of you have Jaws also.
I've got it too.
Of course, yeah. It's still so suspenseful and thrilling and dramatic now, even 44 years after its release. And it's one of the greatest collections of characters ever assembled. You had the serious and level-headed Brody, the sarcastic and lively Hopper, and the grisly and cocky Quint. Does it get better than that, Mark?
I prefer Hooper, not Hopper.
Oh, he's done, mate. Yeah. Oh, it's only taken 123 episodes,
Mark,
Gemma.
Mark, it feels so good. Mate. Yes! Well done.
I was thinking about Stranger Things.
Yeah. They are literally, if you look outside the flat now, they are dancing in the streets.
Yes.
Mark did it, Mark did it.
This was the day we've all waited for.
Wow. I quit. Fuck you all. Sick of this. The way I'm treated around here. Pieces of shit.
Keep going, dude, because I'm loving this, because I always talk about
Jaws.
No, fuck
you. You do yours. I'm not doing your research for you.
No. I've literally talked about Jaws every episode for 123 episodes. For me, it's my favourite film of all time.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. It's the best summer blockbuster of all time. It's the best acting I've ever seen between a trio of characters. Like you said, Robert, Roy, Richard. Brilliant. Quint is my favourite character in cinema history. Mm-hmm. I think he's absolutely incredible. It's the best story for me. It's the best single shot in film history. We all know it, the zoom in that comes through.
Yeah.
But also just when Quint's on the end of the boat and we just see the water and it's that one shot. One of my favourite ever scenes. Some of the best dialogue, the most quotable lines in cinema history. The whole speech that we get from Quint is just a masterclass. And overall, it's the best film ever made. So it was going to make this. I can't say anything else.
No,
everything
is
perfect.
It's incredibly directed by Spielberg, and it's all the more amazing when you think it was only his second theatrical movie.
Crazy.
And think of all the different aspects that he brings to this movie. You've got the shocks, like the head appearing in the hole in the boat, or the suspense as the crew of the boat await the shark's arrival, or the technical mastery of the shot you've just mentioned, that push-in, pull-out trombone shot. And as you mentioned as well, some of the greatest dialogue in film history. I think my favourite one is, he's got lifeless eyes, black eyes, like a doll's eyes. And then, of course, you've got, you go in the cage goes in the water, you go in the water, shark's in the water, a shark. So
brilliant. It's the way he delivers the lines, isn't it? It's absolutely, it is just perfect in every single way. Even just the way he holds his hands, he's got working hands, you know, all this... Everything. And you know about all the stories where it went over budget, it ran over. At times they're going to scrap the whole film. They were rewriting the actual script on the set that day because they weren't liking some of the stuff. People were saying it's the worst ever film. It's had such a fucking pain in the ass trying to get these robotic, horrific, horrific sharks to work. At times they died. They got... I think it went over by about double the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And look what happened.
And it the time as well. It took an extra couple of months to film or something, didn't it?
Nothing went well. And I'm surprised he lived through it. We hear about all these directors that have breakdowns. I don't know how he got through it, but he did. And look at his career since.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
It's also one of the greatest movie posters of all time.
Yes.
Iconic.
You can tell exactly what that whole film is about just by looking at the poster.
And the soundtrack. Just that. Dum.
It's just two notes.
Dum.
Done. It's just print, copy, edit.
That's
classic.
It.
Release.
It is. Pure classic.
That's it. Yeah. Two notes and that will stay with you forever.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I did want to put this as my top pick, but I decided on a film that blew me away from the very first time I ever saw it when I was about 8-9 years old. So my choice is Jurassic Park.
Great choice.
Absolutely incredible.
Can't fault it.
And it really was the most difficult choice, because any other day, if someone was to tell me what's your favourite Steven Spielberg film, I would have said Jaws. But sitting down, really thinking about it, it has always been Jurassic Park. And I'll tell you for why. It's the first film I can remember going to the cinema and genuinely wowing me. It's the first ever summer blockbuster that I've ever seen in my entire life. And it's a film where I fully believed that there could be a theme park full of these extinct animals from years and years and years ago being resurrected and looking so vivid and so realistic. Mm-hmm. It really has everything. It's a world where at first you kind of want to visit. You're like, yeah, I want to see a Diplodocus. I want to see a Velociraptor. But then after a while you go, you know what? I think I'll just follow the Instagram account instead. I'm not going to bother with that shit. But the kids are really relatable and cool. They're not annoying in any way. Sam Neill's development as Grant throughout the whole film is brilliant. The first half of the film, he's this grizzled kind of guy that works out and collects bones for dinosaurs. And he doesn't want to have kids whatsoever. He's not interested. But by the second half of the film, he will do anything to protect these kids and make sure that they make it out alive and off the island. Laura Dern. Laura Dern is fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
And hello, Jeff Goldblum in his sexy unbuttoned black satin shirt, lounging like a badass. Give me that every single day of my life and suck it in my eyeballs.
Hold on. Suck it in my eyeballs. Yeah. Did you ever see the statue of him that was erected in that pose in London?
Seen it. I've got it on my phone. No. No, I'm joking.
Did you use that in the old wank bank?
Locked. But
everyone's loving him at the moment. He did a set at Glastonbury.
He did, his jazz band.
He can't do anything wrong.
He's awesome.
Yeah. But a few months ago, I watched Jurassic Park, where they had this Czech Philharmonic Orchestra playing the music in the background. Mm-hmm. And it really does give this whole new dimension to the film. It really is majestic. It's beautiful. It's stunning. It's really of its kind. It's so original that, again, like the whole thing about, you know, Mary Poppins and shit like that, it's a film that can be enjoyed for many, many years to come later on down the long run. The dinosaurs, when you first see them, they move like gods.
Yeah.
They move in such a revered way that you can't help but stand exactly still and just behold their breathtaking beauty. But then when you put into context, when we first meet the T-Rex, you know, there's a heavy sense of danger just from looking at a glass of water on the side reverberating from the heavy thud of the footprint. Or how about the raptors? You know, they're frenzied. They stalk with silence and precision. But as soon as they lock onto their target, they're going in for the kill. It truly is a spectacle. This film has everything.
It does. And it was made in that golden period where a lot of the animals, the creatures, were done animatronically, but we had good enough CGI to augment certain things, to supplement the animatronics. Whereas now we've gone too far into the CGI and we don't use enough practical effects. Prior to this era of Jurassic Park, it was all practical, which could sometimes look chonky.
Yeah.
So this was the golden zone. This was the Goldilocks zone in the middle there, where you had the best of both worlds, I think.
Yeah. It's also noted on the credits, there is a dino supervisor listed.
He didn't do very well.
Bless him.
He should be sacked.
I think, well, I didn't see his name on Jurassic Park 2 or 3. Just saying.
There are no Jurassic Park 2 or 3 for me.
They are dead to you.
The first film genuinely could rival Jaws as my favourite film some days. If I'm in the right mood, it could probably be better than Jaws for me. The whole entrance where we see the T-Rex tear that car to pieces, rip it upside down, and then goes towards the guy on the toilet and just rips his head off and everything.
He deserved
it. The way it bites at the car and everything, as we said, we know it's all practical, so it looks good. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't look dated now.
No.
Where we see stuff now, and we'll say it, if you watch The Matrix now, 20 years old, it looks dated. Some of the CGI that was, oh, look at that bullet time and all that. That blew your mind. You watch it now, it looks shoddy. It looks cheap. You watch Jurassic Park, it doesn't look... It looks real. Those dinosaurs look real to me. I now go and see Jurassic World. It's not a huge improvement with the CGI.
No, I agree. And there are certain things about Jurassic Park that will always live with me. The one thing is, when the T-Rex when he arrives and there's the glass of water?
Yes.
And it just shakes just a bit. Reverse. If ever I see a glass of water move or shake or anything like that... Like I work with this woman who's an absolute heifer lump. And when she bounds around the office, it makes you drink shake. And I immediately think, of Jurassic Park.
It's done with a guitar string. It was underneath or something.
Is that right?
Just kept plucking, so wow. It made it. Yeah, but
I didn't know that.
That scene is probably one of my favourite in cinema history.
It's wonderful.
I think it's absolutely incredible. And when she's feeding the leaves as well to whatever dinosaur with the bald head, looks a bit like Vin Diesel.
The Diplodocus?
Yeah, when you go... if you watch it again, you'll think of Vin Diesel. But then his head moves in and starts eating it. It's spectacular. And then my favourite scene as well with that one that goes... and it's like neck thing sticks up.
I feel sorry for the listeners that they didn't get to see Mark's hand movements.
Like an umbrella behind his neck. Flaps. Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean,
And then it spits in his face. Yeah. It's a horrendous scene.
A friend of mine, I found out recently, collects movie memorabilia, which his wife's not happy about because he pisses all his money up the wall on it. But he owns one of the original Park Ranger suits from the Jurassic Park film.
That's amazing. We should rob him. I'm serious. That'd be worth loads.
Just jump in one night.
Amazing. Those, I always wanted one of the Jeeps.
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah, I bet they cost thousands. If anyone's listening, you've got one. Yeah. Let us have it.
Well, a normal Jeep costs thousands, Mark. So of course, it's
good. Paint the door red.
Even a second-hand one. You're looking at a good few bit of Skrilla there.
I'm not a fan of the sequels.
No, especially not with Omar, that little gymnastics cow.
Really don't like her. Wasn't it one of your hated characters of all time? Yeah.
Maybe we do a top three most hated characters of all time.
I remember
have
Ben.
Not, have we not done
Ben's
this?
Ben's talked about this gymnast.
Oh, but we've not done it as a topic.
Yeah, there was so much rage.
I wish nothing but death upon her.
Wow.
The actress, not the character.
Because Ben, at the start of today, said it was our most popular, I'm intrigued that people would actually not vote for Jurassic Park or Jaws. What else has he made?
Well, let's see what we've got. Our first one comes from Drew White, a.k.a. Great White Bruce, on Instagram.
What
do you think his choice is?
Sixth Sense?
Incorrect.
Catch me if you can.
He went with Jaws, of course. He said, not only his best, but undoubtedly the greatest movie ever made. So he agrees with you on that, Mark. On Twitter, Mark A. Ramsey at RamsMA has said, my choice for the childhood cinema memories is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
What a film. Wow. You haven't seen it, have you, Ben?
What's
the film you've seen of Indy?
The first Indiana Jones film I saw was the fourth one.
Oh, no.
Crystal Skull.
No wonder why you don't want to watch them.
Which was Bobbins. But then I went back and I watched the first one. Which is the first one?
Whatever one, Raiders I can't remember. I lose track.
I watched the first one and it did nothing for me.
There we go.
Didn't move me in the least.
Well, I mean, when you put a bomb in a fridge, you're scarred for life.
That's your first introduction to Indiana Jones. Yeah. It's aliens at the end.
Shocking.
No wonder you're not in any need to watch the rest.
Moving on to Facebook. Jenny Clay has said, E.T. is my all-time favourite movie. Spielberg captured the pure innocence and imagination of children in this film has stayed with me. I even named my daughter after Drew Barrymore.
I thought she was going to say after E.T. Come on, E.T. Come on, get your stuff. You got to go to school.
On Twitter, Tang Nuo at MTS_Tyra. He's directed several masterpieces and true classics. Choosing one is an impossible task, but Tang has gone with Schindler's List.
Ooh,
wow.
It's a heavy film.
Very, very, very.
So good, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On Instagram, Late Night History has said Empire of the Sun, an unreal cast and a highly underrated film.
It's underrated.
Very, very young Christian Bale.
Tiny Christian Bale.
Yeah, I've only seen that once. I don't remember much about it.
No, me neither, really. Paul Cook on Twitter, at @twit_twooter, has not given a reason, but he said Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
It's a hell of a film. Brilliant.
And he gets a mention for a great Twitter handle.
Yes.
Vicky Priest on Facebook, Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Utterly fantastic and still looks good after all these years.
Yep, can't argue with that.
Couldn't agree more. On Twitter, Ben from the Nerds Chatting Podcast, @Ben_NerdChat, has said Raiders of the Lost Ark, a genre-defying action-adventure movie that I can and regularly do watch often.
It's a great film, and it's always good to watch at Christmas. I don't know why it's got no Christmas theme, but it just feels like one of those films you should watch.
It does, it does. On Facebook, Sam Mendoza, again, no reason, but he said Saving Private Ryan.
Oof.
Phenomenal film.
One of the best opening scenes in history.
On the beach.
Harrowing. Christ.
So good.
Incredible.
Left me feeling very cold.
Me too. And then finally on Twitter, Call of House Kenobi at Obi Col Kenobi has said, catch me if you can. A healthy mix of comedy, tragedy and drama from start to finish. In short, it's the bee's knees.
I fucking love Catch Me If You Can.
I fucking love that film
as
well.
It's a great film.
Because Mark mentioned it was the film that turned me around on Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
It was also the film that turned me around on Tom Hanks, who I'd gone off, and Steven Spielberg, who I was never keen on to begin with.
My God, this film has it all.
It's got magic powers, this film.
Absolutely huge magic powers.
Mm-hmm. Would you like some utterly unscientific analysis?
I've been waiting for this.
Jaws pissed it.
Yeah! The world is right.
It had exactly double the votes of the next best, and the next best was a tie for second place between Raiders of the Lost Ark and Jurassic Park.
Nice.
Nothing else came anywhere near close to those three.
Wow.
15 of his films received votes, but none at all for critical favourites The Colour Purple or Munich.
Wow. I think people forget he's done Munich.
Munich would be in my top three Spielberg films. I think it's incredible.
Munich rules.
We didn't have any votes either for crowd pleasers like Minority Report or Hook.
Oh.
But I think it just goes to show how many films he has got. We even got a couple of votes for Ready Player One, for Christ's sake.
That's mad. Yeah.
I hope there was none for AI.
No, I don't believe there were.
Thank the world. The worst.
I don't think I've seen that film.
It's
all the
way bullshit. Oh. The worst. Absolute worst. Saccharine bollocks.
Oh.
Whose turn is it to pick
it's
out of the
mine.
Bunch?
Go on
then.
Do you want a drum roll?
Yes, please. On the next episode, we will be masturbating over the one, the only, Ridley Scott.
Woo!
Yes!
You're the problem. You're the fucking problem. You fucking Dr. White, onking jam rag, arcing spunk bubble. I'm telling you, H, you keep looking at me, I'm going to put you in the fucking ground. I promise you.
The rewatch on episode 123 is Sexy Beast, directed by Jonathan Glazer and starring Ray Winston, Ben Kingsley, Ian McShane and Amanda Redman. Gal, a retired safecracker, and his devoted wife Dee Dee have a blissful life in the sunshine of Spain. They also have their best friends, H and Jackie, by their sides. Until one day, out of the blue, an old criminal associate, Don Logan, contacts them and asks Gal to help out on one last bank heist. Determined to decline the offer, how can Gal say no when faced with an unpredictable and sociopathic madman? Well, you're about to find out.
Leave us hanging there.
There we go. So, I want to throw this over to Mark first. So, Sexy Beast or Sexy No?
That's terrible.
That was.
You need to work on it. You had a really good introduction there and you ruined it.
Sexy Beast or Ugly Munter.
That's the
degrade into women, which I hate.
I really hate that.
What about men? Come on.
You could just say, Mark, did you enjoy the film?
No.
Keep it simple, stupid.
Yes. Did I enjoy it? Yes, 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 yes. No, 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 no.
Did you?
Don't ever judge a movie by its cover. Yeah. That's what I'm going to say now. Because when I saw it and literally went on, I think it was Amazon or whatever, and saw this very large guy lying on a sun lounger, I literally thought to myself,
Ray Winston.
This is going to be terrible.
What? And the name as well.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck? 10 minutes in, I put my phone down and didn't pick it up for an hour and a half.
Wow.
That is amazing, Gemma, by the way.
That never happens.
Massive. You know, I go to gigs with him, to films, to get him to put his phone down for 30 fucking seconds.
Is an achievement.
I was saying to him the other day that he should never have kids because it would drown in the bath. Because he'd be too busy checking his tweets.
Yeah. Like, retweet, like, reply.
Oh, better just take a photo, it's drown, look. Get on Twitter, hashtag drowning.
Oh my.
This film is another level, and I don't want to say too much because I want to get to it as a threesome in a minute.
Ooh.
Do you know what I mean, though? If I start talking about all the performances,
but
I absolutely fucking loved it from start to finish, and I can't wait to talk about a certain actor shortly.
Mm-hmm. Okie dokie, Ben.
I think it's a very good film. I think it's utterly dominated by Ben Kingsley's performance, and it struggles to recover a little bit after he exits.
Okay.
Spoiler, I didn't know.
Sorry.
Yes.
This is an incredible film because even though it's a gangster film, it kind of parks the action to one side and instead focuses on the characters themselves. Something that doesn't really happen in a lot of gangster films because it's very 50-50. Mm. It's very finely acted and it has a terrific example of unraveling characters and really exposing their true cause. I can't wait to talk about this. So you mentioned about a particular person that you wanted to talk about, Mark. Who is that person?
Mr. Kingsley himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
I've never seen that much of him. I'll be honest with you. I've seen him in Iron Man. Was it Iron Man 2 or 3? One of them.
Three.
Yeah. I've never seen the famous Gandhi. Never seen it.
The famous Gandhi.
The famous.
The
it's
great
a famous
Gandhi.
Film. But the moment he came on, anyone else just they might as well just walked off set because he was mesmerizing from the moment he came on. And I just literally was like, Don Logan is probably the greatest, nastiest piece of work I've seen. And if we did the top three villains, he would now make my top three.
Yeah. The performance of Don Logan is one of the all-time great movie performances for me. He's ferocious. And as Gemma mentioned earlier, he's a complete sociopath. He has this single-minded focus. And when he goes off, it's simultaneously terrifying and hilarious. The rant, when he's up in Gary's face, just giving him shit. Like, it's a quote we've used on the episode, but when he says to him, "You're like a crocodile, fat bastard." It destroys me. You're terrified by him. You recoil in horror, but you're laughing at the same time. And it's incredible to me that this is scripted dialogue, because it feels so goddamn improvised. It's an incredible, incredible script by Lewis Mellis and Dave Cinto. If you go and read it, if you Google Sexy Beast quotes and read these lines, you think, what kind of mind comes up with this to write this? And then what kind of actor can then translate that to such a ferocious, incredible performance?
Mm-hmm. If you notice, when Jackie, H and Dee Dee and Gal, right at the beginning, they have this real carefree life. Like, the world is their oyster. They are living it into happiness in their villa in the middle of nowhere. Not a care in the world, no worries whatsoever. But as soon as the call comes from Don, you notice how much they all change. Like, H, he's like this real sort of lad about town. As soon as he's around Don, he's a quivering schoolboy. You know, he tries to please him as much as he can. Jackie just shuts down completely because, of course, she's had sex with Don in the past. Dee Dee is beside herself. She doesn't really know what to do or how to act. And then there's Gal. Gal, the confident guy, the guy who, you know, had all of these heists in his past and he's enjoying his retirement. Now he's reduced to nothingness. He's reduced to being silent. Like, he has to appease Don in order to just get on with his life. The whole switch around of each of these characters is remarkable, all from this one bald-headed, short-sleeve-wearing man who just, he brings a terror into me. I'm watching on my sofa, I'm thinking I'm safe. I think he's going to start shouting at me and make me cry.
Their life is one big party, and then when he arrives, the party's over. Yeah. He is the proverbial turd in the punch bar.
No one wants to be that. Mm-hmm. Nope.
Never heard that saying before.
The turd is in the punch bowl.
And I'm not drinking any more for the rest of the night. No more at all.
Had enough.
That's my fill.
The party's over. I just think he's just reckless. He's horrendous. He's disgusting. And the way he speaks, even that accent he puts on, is convincing. You know, when sometimes you're so convinced by an actor, you just forget he's not a Cockney or he's not a geezer.
Like Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins, like, so authentic.
Exactly. That's my first go-to thing. Real. But he is just. I can't believe he didn't get the Oscar.
Yes.
He was nominated.
That frustrates me. I think he was robbed of it.
He lost to Jim Broadbent in Iris. Now, Jim Broadbent is a phenomenal actor, but who gives a shit about Iris? Who out there is doing a podcast right now talking about how great Iris was?
Iris to the end.
I'll tell you who are. Goo Goo Dolls. They've got a song called Iris.
Oh, okay. If I was familiar with their work, I'm sure that would have landed for me.
Maybe I would have got it about 11 years ago, but we're in 2019 now, you know.
I want to chop that, but I'm going to leave it in.
Leave it in. One of the most memorable scenes for me, apart from obviously the famous yes, yes, yes scene, is the scene where he's talking to himself in the bathroom. He's having a piss, as he says. A piss. And he decides to urinate on the carpet. But when he starts talking to himself in the mirror, and he is hearing another voice that is conversing with him. And it's so authentic. You can, if you listen hard enough, you might imagine this voice talking back at him. But he is so cold. He's so stuck in his ways that no other way could possibly be better than his own reasoning. He is always right in Don Logan's world. Everybody else is dispensable. Even Jackie, who he claims to love, he is nothing to her.
It's incredible, isn't it? I'm just thinking now about the scene where Gal says accuses him of being a dick to them, basically, because he loves Jackie and because of what happened. And he goes off. It's the scene in the kitchen. Yeah. And he keeps sort of going out of the shot and then popping back into the shot and leaning into Gal, like as if he's going to headbutt him. He gets that close to him. Yeah. And it's crazy. And then after ranting at him, he goes, "I'd like to leave right now, please. Get me a taxi."
Right now. And but it's not the end we see of him.
We keep mentioning Gal, and obviously it's by Ray Winston.
Yes.
I'm not a big fan of his work because he does a lot of rubbish.
Oh, he does.
And you go on his IMDb, there's a lot of crap.
Excuse me, that Paddy Power advert is up there with the gods of them.
So I think you have to really trail through the shit to find the gold, and it's frustrating. But when you do find it, it's worth it.
Yeah.
He, if he wasn't for the absolute amazing Don Logan, would be incredible. Mm-hmm. But the moment he turns up, you forget about him.
Yeah.
But for the first 20 minutes, we don't meet Don. He steals it for me. He's a great actor, and I need to give him more credit.
You're absolutely right, and this is an uncharacteristically subtle performance from Ray Winston. He's usually the, hey, Cockney white boy, hey! But like Gemma says, especially when Don arrives, he just sinks into himself.
Yeah.
He's basically a chastised schoolboy at that point. And it's a brilliant performance from Winston, because I've never seen that colour on him before.
No.
And I don't mean the bright red. sunburn.
Yeah. That's a salmon pink.
He was under that sun for a long time. Also, what's really cool about this film is the metaphor of the rabbit. Mm. So it kind of looks like a really bad version dress-up doll of Frank the Rabbit in Donnie Darko. However, it's a good representation of the whole story itself. So at the beginning of the film, Gal's got the little lad that helps around his pool. So him and H are teaching this little lad how to shoot a rabbit. And misses. Mm. But then when Giles goes to sleep after having the call from Don, this rabbit comes in with a shotgun and starts trying to terrorize him, basically. This is, for me, it's the whole idea of the hunter becomes the hunted. Because they miss the rabbit with the little kid, this rabbit is coming back to claim what's rightfully his, and that's Gal's head. I think it was pretty cool.
That went right over my head, that. I didn't notice any of that. But.
Yeah. I saw those scenes with the rabbit, and I was just thinking to myself, this is so random. Like, what the hell? It doesn't work with the context. But then it's such a stylish film. Yeah. It did work.
Mm-hmm. And you think right at the end when, spoiler alert, he ends up underneath the swimming pool. So Don doesn't make it out alive, guys. Sorry about it.
Yeah.
But we also have the rabbit underneath there too, and it's the merging of them too. And I think when Don looks at him and goes, fuck it, I can't be arsed, I'll just smoke the cigarette instead.
I do think the film suffers, as I mentioned in the intro, it suffers when Don dies because he's such a powerful... He's this magnetising effect on the film. Everything surrounds him and pulls into him. And when he's gone, there's a vacuum, there's a hole left from his presence. And that's not to say the film goes bad after that.
No,
it
doesn't.
And I think the heist scene particularly is amazing. The underwater heist.
It's absolutely incredible.
It's so inventive, so smart.
And mixed in with the murder of Don, because it's not one person that kills him, they all murder him.
When she's punching him and slapping him, and it's like the blood from his mouth and everything, and he's enjoying it because it's just pain.
Because
it's hard to watch.
Because apparently this is the woman he loves, and he's taunting her. He loves it. He gets joy through other people's misery.
It's not nice.
No.
He's a bad man.
He's a bad egg.
Don't take a leaf out of his book.
No, otherwise you'll get your knuckles wrapped.
Yeah.
How dare you.
I'll tell you who else I like. Ian McShane again.
Lovejoy's everywhere, man.
He is
absolutely
Who'd
everywhere.
Who'd have thunk it? Antiques dealer from the late 80s.
And I used to hate him on that. Well, when my parents would watch that, I was like, I'm not Lovejoy. Watching this. I want to go upstairs and watch Biker Grove.
It was a very parents thing, wasn't it?
I was like, my mum and dad used to love that. Mom, I want to watch Biker Grove. Seriously, Spuggy's about to get murdered. Get off the telly. Really want to watch this. Spoiler if you've not watched that episode yet. But he's a great actor. And like you mentioned him recently in Deadwood.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal.
He's still going now.
John Wick is in. Brilliant in
Hellboy.
That as well.
Yeah. He wants to forget about that.
Never mind.
But he's a great actor.
He's a magnificent actor. He's getting on for 80 now. And he's still killing it.
No, he's not.
He really is. Yeah, he's in. I'm sure he's in his late 70s.
I'm sure he's been like 40 for about 30 years.
Yeah. He's in American Gods as well, which is shite.
Good.
The second series.
I've not seen the second series yet.
Awful. Not terrible, but he's brilliant in it.
Oh, okay.
To be fair.
Why is it so bad?
Just rubbish.
Oh.
Make any fucking sense.
Can we make him an official granddad?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think, actually, scientifically, he'd be old enough to have Kurt Russell as his son, but fuck it. Yeah. He's our granddad. Welcome to the family.
Grandpa Lovejoy.
Oh, that sounds like a dodgy porno.
To you it might. Fucking hell.
What do you watch?
A lot of rubbish.
But of course, at the end, you know, we do see Don getting murdered, we see the bank heist, and everybody is back to where they are from the beginning of the film. I just think that it's the right... It's the right time limit for the film because it's only about an hour and 20 minutes. It's really not a long film. But for a film to have that kind of impact from the very moment it starts to the end, I think it's perfect.
Yeah, I do agree with you. As I say, I do think the film suffers at the back end a little bit.
Yes, it does.
But it is a very good film. And it was directed by Jonathan Glazer, who doesn't do a lot, hasn't directed many films. But one of his other films was Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson, which is an incredible film.
So also, very weird film.
It is. But he also did a couple of music videos too. I think most notable was Uncle's Rabbit in the Headlights, where you see the man with the Parker keeps getting hit with a car.
Yeah.
Like, that's an incredible music video. Uncle also provided a bit of the original score.
As a stylish film, I think it did look brilliant. And at times, some of the shots he did with the red lighting open, he's a very good director.
Yeah. Oh, there's an example at the beginning of the film when they're all having a party and it's slowed down into this slow motion kind of movement. And you see Gal and Dee Dee sort of embracing up on the top of like the city or the town that they live in. And it's got this beautiful kind of like bossa nova kind of music in the background. It's also romantic.
He's a good director.
He is.
That's what stands alone from your usual sort of Lock, Stock and all that. That's the one that stood out. It was a bit more like, oh, actually, you can direct.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to see more from him. But I'm glad he's not just doing any old shit every 6 months like a lot of directors do.
Yeah, but doesn't that say, you know, whatever his next project may be, we're in for a treat.
Hell yeah.
And with true typical Skipsian fashion, he'll be announced next week in a huge film.
Mm.
You know it.
That's it. We always get it right, don't we?
Here we go. Skip to Dramas. Nostradamus.
You're talking absolute shit.
It's coming from you.
Let's wrap it up.
Okay, so I think we're done with Sexy Beast. Let's score it, Ben.
8 out of 10.
Lovely. Mark?
8 out of 10.
I'm giving it 9 out of 10.
Wow, that's a hell of a score.
I really like this, and I do agree with Ben. It does start getting a little bit weak when Don is dead, but it is a great film. I'm glad we've talked about it. So that gives us a skip to the end. 8 out of 10 for Sexy Beast.
Whose rewatch choice is it next, Gemma? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know. It's not mine. But it's not mine. Wait a minute. Ben's.
Oh, it's me?
Yes.
Ah. Oh, shit. I wish I'd prepared for this.
Uh-oh. Pull anything out of the bag.
I have, really. We're going to be rewatching what I believe to be Quentin Tarantino's most underrated film.
Oh.
We're going to be rewatching A Jackie Brown.
Oh.
Yes.
Hold on to your butts. It's the third and final round of our wildly amazing quiz, A Test of Character. Guys, we're going to do this for the wooden spoon because I'm the winner. All right.
Oh, arrogant.
It's depressing. Arrogant.
This never happens. Let me have my moment.
It is bad. I scrap it. There's no point.
Be magnanimous in victory.
Yes.
It's just rude.
Never happens. I'm going to cling on to this moment. But it's not about me, surprisingly. It's about you guys today. So I'm going to give you the rules before we kick off. So I'll be giving you gents 5 film characters from 5 different films. And your task is to work out who played these characters and ultimately what film did these actors all appear in. So example, on the last episode, Ben gave us Dewey Finn, White Goodman, Scott Lang, Gru and Ricky Bobby. They are of course played by Jack Black, Ben Stiller, Paul Rudd, Steve Carell and Will Ferrell in a film Anchorman. So we're going to be doing that kind of thing. I'll have 5 films and I will be reading out 1 character at a time. The first character I'll read out will be for 5 points, second one's going to be for 4 points, and so on until we get to 1 point. And as you are playing against each other, you want to be acquiring the points for yourself and yourself only. No friends in this round. So when you want to take a pop at answering, Ben, you're going to shout your name Ben. Yep. Mark, you're going to be shouting your name Mark.
Okay, cool.
Brilliant. I'm glad we've clarified that. And if you answer incorrect on your guess, you're going to be frozen out, allowing your opponent the upper hand.
These games are pretty good. Yeah. When you listen to all that, mm-hmm. We are pretty talented. Yeah.
Although, there's going to be an additional rule because of last episode's monumental fuck-up by myself and Mark.
We were so bad.
We were terrible, weren't we, buddy? So, if by the end of the 5 characters, the players haven't guessed the film, I'm going to be reading them out again, and I'm going to say which film that character is in to help you guys out.
Okay.
Does that sound fair?
Yes,
massively.
Yeah? Lovely. And if we find ourselves in a tie situation, I may have a question in the back to solve that.
A little bit of tiebreaker action.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So are we ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's go with the first one. So for 5 points, Hiccup. That's Hiccup.
We're not going to get any sponsorship for anything for Hiccup. That's Hiccup.
Can you imagine if we did?
Yeah.
Every time we hiccup, we'd be rich.
We'll get sent loads of cough medicine. Yeah. Fuck's sake. I'm not guessing at this point.
No, me neither.
All right. So for 4 points, your next one is Nacho. 4 points.
Mm-hmm.
Nacho. Mm-hmm.
Do I have a guess just because...
You know what? We're here now. Have a guess.
No, because you're just pushing it. That's not fair.
Well, I'm not playing.
No, we'll go for one more.
You sure? All right then. So, for 3 points, Derek Zoolander. That is for 3 points.
Ben.
Go on.
Tropic Thunder.
He's got it!
Oh! Good work.
Well done. 2 points was going to be Maverick, and 1 point was going to be Tony Stark. So 5 points, Hiccup was Jay Baruchel from How to Train Your Dragon. 4 points was Nacho, Jack Black from Nacho Libre. And 3 points, of course, was Derek Zoolander, Ben Stiller.
Good start.
Well yeah. done, Ben.
Thank you.
When you were saying it, you were still questioning yourself.
I know,
this is
right?
Tough one, isn't it?
Because I think they've been in a fair few films together, that's the thing.
There's a lot of shite they've done.
Well, they were in Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny. I could have said that.
Exactly.
But you got it right on this one.
How dare you.
So 3 points, Ben. 0 points, Mark. But
all right, it's only one. Come on.
You've still got loads, don't you?
I know. I'm getting a bit anxious. Okay. I'm like a white one.
Right.
Shit, sure.
So the next one for 5 points, we've got Russell Hammond. Does anybody want to take a guess? Or shall we move on?
It'd be absolute suicide, wouldn't it?
Do it.
No.
Okay. So, ready to move on to 4?
Yeah.
4 points.
Caesar Flickerman.
That's definitely a poor though.
Does anybody want to take a guess or a punt or a gamble?
Fuck no.
Then let's go 3 points.
Well done, Mark's still thinking.
Oh, is he?
No.
Okay.
That would be suicide again, no.
So for 3 points, we've got Regina George. I can tell you now, this room is incredibly tense.
It's incredibly bloody warm as well.
That too. Oh, is that what it was? Yeah. Oh, sorry, my mistake. Does anybody, can I get anyone a guess here?
It's really annoying, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really fucking annoying.
It's going to piss me off when we hear the answer.
Okay, shall we go to number two? Yeah. 2 points. 2 points.
People are screaming at home.
They are. Yeah. They are. Don't worry.
The amount of tweets and text messages I got this week of people going, how did you know not that was heat? I was like, all right.
I know.
Do you know what I mean?
Guys, until you've been in our shoes, then you'll realise.
Yeah.
So, for 2 points, Batman.
This is horrendous.
I know, guys. I know. Come on. We can do this. Don't worry. But remember the other rule we said earlier.
I know, but it's embarrassing.
I know, my
it's
darling.
Pride.
I know, sweetheart.
No, it's Pride this weekend in London.
Okay, all right. I thought you just... okay.
Shit on a stick.
Should I take any advance on the 1 point one?
Oh, go on then.
Yeah, okay.
That's embarrassing. I'm at least Ben hasn't humiliated me with 5 points.
He is
here.
On 3 points.
I know.
Yeah, you're on zero.
All right. She's having that.
For 1 point.
Yes.
Bruce Banner. I can hear the cogs turning.
It's annoying me.
I think that might be the clock. It is the clock. Sorry, my mistake.
That's bad. We're going to have to
go around again. Okay, no,
I can see them all, but I just can't think of what they're all in together.
Except for Flickerman, whoever the fuck that is.
Okay, so because in a situation, I'm going to help these guys out by saying what film that character is in. So we're going to go right back to the beginning for 5 points. So Russell Hammond in Almost Famous.
We knew that.
Yeah.
That doesn't help at all.
I know. I'm such a bitch.
I thought we'd get told who the
actor is. Yeah, I gave you the names as well.
Oh, did you? Yeah. I'll give you the name though as well. Russell Hammond, Almost Famous, played by Billy Crudup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a great actor.
Brilliant actor. Yeah.
For 4 points. Caesar Flickerman is in The Hunger Games, played by Stanley Tucci.
Stanley Tucci.
Mm-hmm. The Tuchmeister General.
This is so bad. I'm going to flip the table, I think. It's one of them.
Should we go to 3 points?
Yeah.
Regina George in Mean Girls, played by Rachel McAdams.
Go to the next one.
Yeah, okay.
This is Batman. That's...
2 points. Batman in the Batman series of Joel Schumacher, Michael Keaton.
Fucking hell.
I'm just going to guess.
You're going to guess? Go on.
Birdman. I know it's not. Just
can you imagine if I said right? But it's not right.
I just want for the listeners.
Okay, so you're frozen out, love.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Okay. Oh well.
Right.
Okay. So Ben, for 1 point, Bruce Banner, the MCU, Mark Ruffalo.
So we've got Mark Ruffalo.
Yes.
Stanley Tucci.
Yes.
Who was the Batman? Michael Keaton.
Indeed. Regina George.
Regina George, which
is Crudup.
And Billy Crudup. Christ on a bike.
It's terrible. I apologise to all the listeners right now who are screaming on the M1. They're going,
but they might just be screaming in general.
Yeah.
Shame. Do you want to take a guess?
I know. I'm going to have to pass.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, the film is Spotlight.
Oh, fuck me.
Jesus, God. We reviewed that as well.
Jesus
but
Christ.
Like, when you're in that situation, guys, I was privy of myself
you've done
last
well.
Week.
Week.
No, don't worry.
That's a great one.
Oh, shit.
Well, thankfully, we've got some more coming up.
Holy
so
hell.
Can we edit this so we sound better? Yeah. Spotlight.
Fuck.
Spotlight.
Good work.
But, thank you. But that's in the past. We're in the future, and we're going to go to the next one. For 5 points, we've got Mom.
Brilliant.
You've done a mark.
Mom.
No thought. Straight in. Mom.
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 Okay. Just Mom. You're not doing it with the accent.
I'm not saying Mom as the Queen. I'm saying Mom.
Okay. Don't know.
Okay. Well, there we go.
Brilliant. Cheers.
Some of the many highlights you'll get from these. Skip to the end podcast. For 4 points, Will Scarlet. William Scarlet. And I believe it's William Scarlet the First.
That helps, cheers.
It does. You're more than welcome, Willow.
I don't know.
Yeah, should we move on to the third point?
Let's just get straight to skip to recommend.
3 points! So for 3 points.
We're not playing for anything. And the pride I wanted to try and win is gone.
Like, you know what? Fuck this!
Find out next week.
So for 3 points.
Okay.
Winston Churchill.
Okay, cool. That helps.
Brilliant.
Let's go with...
Are you guessing?
Yeah, we've got Mike as well.
Would you like to play by the rules and say your name? Or you can say Benson.
Is he going to have a punt?
Mark.
Okay.
Hannibal.
Incorrect.
Oh. Just got to guess, haven't you?
Fair play. Well, you don't have to. You could wait and get some more points.
Yeah.
But we're here now.
I want the listeners to be entertained.
We can't change the past.
They're listening to the wrong show. That's what they need.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. Would you like to go for 2 points, Ben? Would you like to give a guess on Winston Churchill?
Fuck no. Come on. Give me the next one.
2 points. Frank Abagnale.
Okay. So.
So much pain on your face is etched everywhere.
Because I know it's going to really piss me off because I don't know it.
I know.
Oh, crap on a crutch.
Would you like to go to 1 point?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
True Romance.
He's done it!
Yes! Good work.
Well, fucking done.
Because the key is you didn't say Frank Abagnale Jr.
I didn't.
You said Frank Abagnale.
That's right.
Which is Christopher Walken.
That's right. Yes!
Good work.
And 1 point was going to be King Cooper.
Nice.
So to go through those, Mom was Patricia Arquette in Boyhood. Will Scarlet was Christian Slater in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
That's not a bad film.
It's a terrible film.
It's the worst film I've ever seen in my entire life. Winston Churchill was Gary Oldman in Darkest Hour. Frank Abagnale, of course, was Christopher Walken, Catch Me If You Can. And King Cooper was Dennis Hopper in Super Mario Bros.
Not Dennis Hooper. Thank you.
All right. Rubbing
What's
it
the
in.
Score again?
Rude.
So the score is Ben 5-0. Has five... Mark, is there still
is there
chance?
Still two left?
There is still two left.
So if I could still win this.
You can still get 10 points. Yeah.
Yeah.
In an ideal fantasy world.
Yeah.
So let's continue.
Let's go for five. Come on.
So 5 points. We have Theo Farron.
Joke. I'm not doing it.
Move on to 4 points.
Yes, please.
Okay, 4 points. Sue Storm. There's some kind of trepidation. That might be me being sweaty. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
I'm just thinking, if Ben guesses it now, I can't win.
I know. Well, this is it. Do you want to just go down in a blaze of glory like Bon Jovi in the late 80s?
I'm not going to guess.
Okay.
But that's ringing a bell big time.
There we go. That wasn't a clue, by the way.
Ben, are you ready to move on?
Yes.
Okay. 3 points. Frodo Baggins.
Ben.
Yes.
Sin City.
Well fucking
good work.
Done. Well bloody done, mate.
Good work. Good work.
Good work.
Good work. So yeah, 5 points was Theo Farron, Clive Owen in Children of Men.
Great film.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous.
4 points was Sue Storm, that was Jessica Alba in Fantastic Four. 3 points for Frodo Baggins, of course, is Elijah Wood in the Lord of the Rings series. 2 points was going to be Randy the Ram Robinson in The Wrestler.
Nice.
Mickey Rourke, and 1 point was Corbin Dallas, The Fifth Element, Bruce Willis.
Great work.
We're going to continue, but I think it's safe to say Ben has pissed this one all over, so he's won this one. But let's move on to the next and final one.
Yeah.
For 5 points, Edward Snowden.
This would be a lot easier if we had IMDb.
It would be, yeah. But we don't have IMDb because those are not the rules.
What was his first name?
Edward.
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 Edward. Yeah. There's nothing for you here.
Nope.
4 points it is then. 4 points, Edith Piaf.
Oh, fucking hell.
I know.
See, I know who played Edward Snowden, but I can't remember who played Edith Piaf.
And I'm the other way around.
Mm. Oh.
We
with your
together.
Powers combined! You're like a shit Captain Planet. Captain Answers.
Let's go to the next one.
Yeah. 3 points. Arnie Grape. Can anybody
balls
visualise?
Don't ring me if you ever get on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, because I'm not going to be any good.
Oh, fuck's sake, what was that?
Mark, you live on telly. Oh, fuck.
Shall I move to two?
Yeah.
2 points. Juno McGuff.
Ben.
Go on, Ben.
Inception.
Ding, 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 ding,
great
ding,
work.
Ding, ding.
I let him have that.
Thanks, Mark, <mate. laughs>
Mark just wanted a straight zero. So just to go through that, 5 points, Edward Snowden was played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt in mm-hmm. Snowden. 4 points, Edith Piaf was Marianne Cotillard from La Vie en Rose.
Such a beautiful actress.
Mm. A bloody Oscar, didn't she?
She did indeed for that one. 3 points, Arne Grape was Leonardo DiCaprio in What's Eating Gilbert Grape. 2 points, Juno McGuff was, of course, Ellen Page in Juno. And the last one, 1 point, would be Charles Bronson, Tom Hardy in Bronson.
Lovely stuff.
Fantastic film.
What are the scores on the doors, Gemma?
Ben got 10, ooh. Mark got 0.
Not bad. It's close.
But I've got a sneaky one in the back. Shall I get it?
Little tiebreaker.
Here we go.
It's not the real quiz, though.
This is the tiebreaker. It's not the real quiz. Because it's been so close. Yes.
It's a cheeky little one to end on. So, for 5 points, we've got Fade.
Fade?
Fade?
Of Fade.
Fade.
T-H-A-D-E.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, not like a fader.
Or a tarde.
Fuck it, Ben.
Go on.
Reservoir Dogs.
Incorrect. Oh. I'm sorry.
I've already won. But
Ben doesn't give a shit.
Yeah. Just make sure I write down Res Dog so I don't say it. Yeah. Come on then.
4 points.
Yep.
Steven.
Brilliant.
Cheers, mate. That's good. That'll help.
Oh God, Ben, you might as well be unfrozen and come back in.
I could always give you a hint because this isn't the real quiz. Should I give you a hint? Because you'll. I think it might be obvious. Well, I don't know.
Are you using Stephen as Steve Hobbs?
No.
Oh, okay. Jobs, even?
No.
Steve Hobbs. Steve Hobbs. Yeah, he lives down the road.
You know,
yeah.
Did that old technology firm, Banana.
I'll give you that. I don't know, Stephen.
Okay. Would you like me to give you a hint?
I just want to get on to skip the recommend, if I'm right. Honest.
3 points.
Yep.
Jenko.
Oh, what the fuck?
Fuck knows.
2 points.
Yeah.
Mr. Bond.
Don't know.
1 point.
Yeah.
Jack Burton.
Oh, okay.
Bear.
Go on.
Oh, God. What's the Tarantino one where they're stuck in the
cabin? The Hateful Eight.
You can't jump ahead of me, motherfucker.
No, Ben was in the zone.
The Hateful
Ben.
Eight.
Well done, Ben.
Oh, yeah, suck it.
That's done it. 11-0. Right.
Well, after that thrilling round of a test of character, Ben has won this round with 11. Mark just participated. Well done, Ben.
Right. Taking part that matters.
Exactly. Exactly.
Everyone gets a trophy.
That's good.
But mainly me.
We'll come back in 2 weeks' time with a brand new game show. So that's a good one. But for now, you are the queen and a deserved winner. Well done, Gemma.
Thank you. Oh, cheers, chaps.
Thanks.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too. Simple as that.
Simple as peas.
Simple as peas indeed. Gem, I'm going to throw it over to you first, Pooch. What have you got?
I've got a book.
A book, is it?
I've only had a book like once.
And wow.
So, or twice maybe. So
Even Mark's had books.
I know. Right?
I never read them. I just read the back of them. Yeah.
This is a good book. So I've gone for Daisy Jones and the Six by Taylor Jenkins Reid.
Ooh, it's a lot of words.
It
is.
A lot of words, a lot of names, and there's about 300 odd pages. Bloody so hell. You have to really pack in the time to read this. So it takes the reader back to the rock and roll heyday of the 1970s, and we're introduced to the alluring Daisy Jones. Now, she's a free-spirited vocalist who can change the world with her voice, but can't seem to change her destructive inner demons with drugs and booze. We also meet a band called The Six, and they are a rock band on the verge of breaking through the music biz, led by frontman Billy Dunn, who is also trying to exorcise some inner demons. One day, they have their worlds collide, and they create something that leaves a mark on American rock music forever. So they find themselves all of a sudden being the world's biggest pop group. And then the next day, they disappear from the public eye, and they don't make any more records. But why? Don't worry, it's nothing too, like, you know, suspicious. Don't get, like, abducted by aliens. So we're all right.
I'll look for that.
Really elevated the whole story. So instead, the story sets out to uncover the truth of why the band of musicians decided to call it quits and walk away from the height of their success. Now, the story is told through a series of interviews from the author, and it reminds me, and I don't know if you guys remember this,
back in the 90s on VH1, there used to be a documentary series called Behind the Music.
Of course. I used to love
it's amazing.
The music. Yeah.
Reading this book, the way how it's written, it reminded me so much of Behind the Music on VH1. And it's very candid, and it's almost like each of the band members are speaking to you directly and telling their experience. And some people remember it from, you know, different people. But
Sorry, Gemma, let me just ask you a question. So is this a fictional story, or is it non-fiction?
Now, the way how it was marketed was as if it genuinely happened. Right. So, of course, a lot of people went on Google, went, oh, who's Daisy Jones and the Six? This is a fictional book. It's not true whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But I got the impression that something like this could have happened because it felt like the story of the likes of Fleetwood Mac, who very famously, obviously, fell in love, fell out of love, like, battled, like, drugs, booze and all that. And so it's very reminiscent from those kind of rock bands of the 70s. But the story is humorous, it's brutal, it's dramatic, it's heartbreakingly sad in places with one hell of a punch to the gut. But it's got everything that you could possibly want for a really good read of a summer book. I love this book. It kept me gripped from start to finish. Wholly recommended.
I like the sound of that. I like those books that are fictional but have that vibe of non-fiction about them.
Also, when I was reading this, Daisy Jones reminded me so much. I just had her in my head all throughout the book, of Natasha Lyonne. Like, with this flame red hair. She's got gold hoops, gold bangles. She's barefoot. She wears all these beautiful flowing dresses. She's stunning. She's got an amazing, gravelly, kind of heart-wrenching voice. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get Natasha Lyonne out of my head. She'd be perfect for something like this.
And again, like we said earlier, now that we've mentioned it, it's going to be announced next week. Yeah. New on Netflix.
Yes.
Starring Natasha Lyonne.
But a great book, really, from... Yeah, I couldn't put it down, hence why it's a recommendation.
Sounds interesting.
Mm, it's good.
I will never read it, but that's the commitment that... Because I won't read any book. That's what I dig to your recommend, but it does sound a fucking awesome book.
Yeah, definitely worth it.
Very cool.
Marky Mark, what you got?
I've got an album.
Ooh.
It was out last week by Jamie Lemon.
Ah!
His brand new album's just come out, called Shuffle. It's 14 reinventions of Jamie's favourite music, from chart hits such as Cyndi Lauper. You've got Seal, which you've heard when we went to see him live, his rendition.
Yes, yeah.
We've got the Beatles on there, but he's also got a good mix in there. So at the moment, it seems to be the cool thing to do a covers album.
Yeah.
Weezer have recently done it, Eagles of Death Metal.
Yeah.
They're cool, but I'm getting a bit sick of it because it's like too much. And sometimes with Weezer, I absolutely love that band, but they've done like a cover of Toto, Africa, and it's exactly like the record. There's nothing to make it itself.
Didn't Deftones do an album of covers?
They did as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, they did a lot of covers in B-session, B-sides of albums, and they collated them. Yeah. It wasn't specifically a covers album, but yeah, there's a lot of good stuff on there.
So what I really like about Jamie, not just because I absolutely love the guy anyway, but it's a whole reinvention. So when you listen to his songs, you've heard I sent you week, Cyndi Lauper's...
You gave me She-Bop.
She-Bop.
So good.
It's unbelievable.
It's
we saw the Seal cover live of Killer, which is amazing. He does Hey Jude. But what I really like on there as well is he's done some film scores on there as well. So he's redone Taxi Driver, which is mind-blowing. So after recording today, I'll just show you because it's 3 minutes.
Cool.
To know he's done that in a studio with guitars and drums and bass, it's genuinely genius. He's also done a rendition of the Popeye theme tune, which we saw live.
Yes, and that was brilliant.
Which is metal, like absolutely full-on ferocious metal screaming with this riff that you'd hear off something like Slayer or Pantera screaming, I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. And you'd think it's a joke and a gimmick, but because it's done so well and with so much thought and stuff, it works really, really well.
It does.
Nice.
Jamie Lemon, for me, is right now one of the best British songwriters. So when he does his own music in Revolver and stuff like this, and with his band Ruben back in the day, he was writing songs that I think are some of the best British music we've ever heard. But to know he's doing this and taking time out and having fun and touring it and just doing what he wants. He's not going to this massive label like Sony saying, you need to do this, you need to release this whole album of heartfelt love songs and all this emo crap. He's going and doing what he wants, and he's gone, fuck it, I want to put on some Cyndi Lauper because I used to like it, I want to stick some Beatles on, and I want to stick the Taxi Driver soundtrack on. Who else would do that in music right now and do it well and not make it a gimmick?
Yeah, you're right. And you mentioned the Eagles of Death Metal one there, and it's very, very hit and miss. There's a couple of good things on that one, though. They did a version of Careless Whisper by George Michael.
Beautiful. Which is great.
It's really good. Yeah.
But there's a lot of shit on
there. There's a lot of shit on there, I say hit and miss, I'm being generous.
Yeah.
It's mostly miss.
And I wouldn't want to go and see them play it live. I wouldn't. No. I'd just be like, this is, play your actual songs
but
that I like.
That being said, when we saw them live at Download, they did a couple of covers, didn't they?
To be honest, they did David Bowie cover. It was amazing. But I wouldn't want to see a set of it.
No.
You tell me I can go and see Taxi Driver played live and Seal songs. What? But you get there, you'd be like, this is amazing.
The She-Bop cover is awesome.
It is. It's so fat.
It's brilliant.
It's because he makes them his own.
Yes.
That's what makes you want to go and see him do them.
Yeah. And I know I keep banging the drum about him, But Ben, you went and saw him live in another venue just around the corner, and he was incredible.
He was fantastic.
And that's not me saying, please pick it up, because I love him. You genuinely loved it.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
And following on from the Shebop recommendation, I did actually listen to Revolver, and it's a great album.
It is.
Really brilliant.
And knowing he's doing it all on his own,
I
know he's doing it on his own. It's magical.
Can we use that in the future?
Magnificent.
Should we try and get that? Like, catch it on with the kids. Yeah. Like, kids, if something's cool, just say magnet. Yeah.
Right.
Tom Holland's performance as Spider-Ham.
We're losing the plot.
Magnet.
What did you think of Spider-Ham? It was magnet.
Magnet. Proper magnet.
#magnet. That's what I want to see now. Yeah. If you love our. Leave us an iTunes rating and say that we're magnet. You can have a Funko bar.
Prize.
Yeah.
There we go. Brilliant. Come on, Ben. Is your recommendation magnet? Shit.
To me it is. It's hella magnet, I'd say. I've gone with a book, much like Gemma. Mine is a book called American Prison by Shane Bauer. Bauer is an investigative journalist who became fascinated with writing about prisons after he was arrested in Iran and held on bullshit espionage charges for 2 years. He was literally just walking around. Jeez. He was walking around Iraq with a couple of friends, and they strayed onto Iranian territory unwittingly and were arrested. And because they were pressed, they assumed they were spies, and they were kept in prison for 2 years.
Shit.
So when he got back to the US, he became particularly fascinated with the American prison system, especially privatized for-profit prisons that care more about cutting costs and making money for their shareholders than they do about rehabilitation or even looking after the prisoners in their care. So what Bauer did as an investigative journalist, he went undercover. He got a job as a screw, as a prison guard in Wynn Correctional Center in Louisiana, and he worked there for 4 months. And all the time while he was there, he managed to record his experiences. He had like one of those coffee mugs with a little camera in it. He had a pen, had a recording device in it, so he got all this footage. And he managed to experience firsthand how atrocious the conditions are, like prisoners being forced to remain in their cells 24 hours a day, which is against the rules. Mm. They're supposed to get X amount of free time to go into the yard. Yeah, exactly. But they were kept in for 24 hours a day because there just simply weren't enough guards. They couldn't allow them out because they would overrun the guards. And there aren't enough guards because it's a privatized prison. To save money, they don't hire enough guards. Or even the guards they have are inexperienced and unsuitable, including former convicts they hire as guards. They pay them $9 an hour, which is the same as you get paid for working in McDonald's.
Shit.
Jesus Christ. You know what I mean?
And even things like, in this prison, they had guard towers all around the prison, which are supposed to be manned by guards with guns watching for escapees. They didn't bother because they had a computer system that was linked to all the cameras, so they had one dude looking at 30 cameras rather than having anyone in these towers. So, unsurprisingly, people get fucking escaping.
Oh my God.
It's absolute garbage. But the book also doubles as a history lesson because it basically alternates chapters between his experiences in Wynn Correctional, and the next chapter will be about the history of privatisation of prisons throughout the years. Yeah. And it's absolutely fascinating. It looks at how, after slavery was abolished, all the white landowners had all their plantations, and they thought, well, we don't want to lose all of our black labour, so let's create a system whereby we make up bullshit laws that make us arrest all these black people and then make up a law that says we can force them into labour when they're in prison.
That is fucking bullshit.
So thousands upon thousands of freed black slaves then ended up back on the same plantations being worked to death because they were prisoners. Christ. And they were worse off because when they were slaves... they were purchased. They were property.
Yeah.
So the landowners had had a reason to keep them alive because they didn't want to waste their money.
Yeah.
But when they were prisoners, it was like, fuck it. Let them die. We'll get another one.
Oh my God.
The conditions were far worse. And that takes it up to the present day and the whole system of privatized prison. And it's absolutely crazy. And it looks at how the whole system is rigged because the more prisoners they lock up, the more money prisons make.
Yeah.
So... everyone involved in the system is incentivized to create draconian laws to lock people up. That's why they have things like mandatory minimum sentencing in the US. So things like if you're caught with X amount of drugs in certain states, it's 20 years. There's no recourse, there's no way of arguing it, doesn't matter how good your lawyer is, they have mandatory minimum sentences. Some states have the three strikes law that if you're arrested for three things, even if they're three tiny minor things like shoplifting, three strikes, boom, prison, 20 years. Mandatory minimum sentences, it's disgraceful, and it's purely to fill these prisons to create a cheap workforce. It's fucking disgusting. And this explains why the US has 22% of the world's prisoners, even though the US only has 4% of the world's population. Think of the disparity there.
That's crazy.
It's crazy and it's fucking disgusting. It's horrifying. And it's because the US runs on capitalism. And there's nothing inherently wrong with capitalism. I'm not a commie. I understand capitalism. But when it's taken to that level of extreme, it's fucking disgusting.
Wasn't that highlighted in Orange is the New Black?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. The seasons in that where it's why they went on strike, isn't it?
Yep.
You know, why they rioted. Mm-hmm. It's based on this kind of thing, the privatisation of prisons, the taking away some of their basic human rights.
Yeah,
yeah, it's fucking disgraceful.
So how long ago did he do this book? How long ago did he go to these prisons?
Oh, this book came out last year.
Oh,
I think it was about 3-4 years ago.
Wow.
He actually was in there.
So it's so recent.
Yeah.
That just turns my
stomach. It's an eye-opener, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's a documentary on Netflix, which I haven't yet watched, but it's called 13, directed by Ava DuVernay, which is about the prison system. And that looks at similar things to this, about how basically black people were taken out of slavery and then thrown into indentured servitude in prisons. Nothing really changed. So all this stuff at the minute I'm absolutely fascinated by. Good stuff. It's dark, heavy material. It's not a fun read.
It's not Popeye.
It's not a metal version of Popeye, I'm giving you that. But it's a very fucking good book. That's American Prison by Shane Bauer.
Blimey.
Question for you, Ben, on the spot. How do you find out about some of these books? Because obviously now the listeners will go, oh, wicked, Ben's checked back. Who told you about that book? How did you read a review? Did it recommend to you? How did that come about?
A different way. I read a lot of websites that will have things like, you know, books of the month. Vulture.com is very good at that. They do their best reads of the month.
Cool.
So it's different manners. You know, sometimes I get recommendations from friends, all different ways. But yeah, you're right.
That's quite a unique book.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And it's definitely worth a read.
I want to see a documentary on it because I don't like reading. Yeah. So if I can sit and watch it out, it's just easier. But it's true because it's less time consuming, and I can't read when I'm driving to work and stuff. So if I can
can watch a documentary
on the dashboard, my iPad. Sorry, officer, I was watching a documentary.
Like a kid with a DVD player in the back seat.
As he arrests me, it's people like you on this documentary.
Oh my
mate.
Goodness.
That sounds great.
It is very good. Do you want to hear what the listeners have come up
Absolutely.
With?
Absolutely.
On Instagram, John Kennedy, aka JKK underscore egg, has said, recently I've been playing Eddie Vedder's Into the Wild soundtrack on repeat. Absolute class.
Amazing soundtrack.
And this is timed to perfection, isn't it, Mark? Yes. Where were you? Where were you last night?
I went to Wembley Stadium with our good friend Darren. Mm-hmm. We went to see The Who, but we only bought the ticket because Eddie Vedder was main support for The Who.
Yeah.
So we had an hour set from him, acoustic, which you think, oh, that'd be boring. It wasn't. He had a string section with him. He started with Alive. He had Black on there from Everyone Loves Pearl Jam. He had Wishlist. He was phenomenal. And one of my favourite songs ever is Corduroy by Pearl Jam. I absolutely fucking love it. It's off the Vitology album. He's never played it live on the tour. And I said to Darren on the way down, how cool would it be? What did he play?
Corduroy.
It's one of those days where you're like, this is so freaky. And the best part was when we were at the gig, he had come off and obviously he did a speech about how he was honoured to be there. His favourite band of all times, The Who.
Yep.
So I looked over and he was stood in the crowd watching The Who, which is cool as fuck. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm not going to be that person that goes over and asks for an annoying photo because you just don't want to. He's with his wife and kids.
Yeah.
I just walked over. There was a massive security guard. He looked like sort of John Coffey. He was huge, but 8
did
foot.
Did he have a flat cap on, like a Brett?
He had
like
a mouse
Hovis.
With him in his hand, yes. And he basically, I just walked over and shook his hand, like fist bumped him, just said, thank you for your music. And Darren walked over, looked at him and just kind of just like, just thank you. That's all it needed.
Yeah.
And that moment he took 10 seconds, it was enough.
And you can go to your grave knowing that you fisted Eddie Vedder.
Yes. But it's mad. It's absolutely mad.
Yeah. That's phenomenal.
It's amazing. And I'm not just saying it. It's one of the best live performances I've ever seen.
Also, think how he feels. He got to fist bump with Mark from Skip to the End and Mark and Me.
He listens.
He does. He definitely wants to come on and do an episode.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't think I can fit him in.
Well, you know, this is it, though.
Sorry.
Shame.
On Twitter, Matthew Schoaf at Matty the Ghost has said the game Bloodstained Ritual of the Night. If you had fond memories of Castlevania or of any of the Metroidvania games, then this will be right up your alley.
Bloody hell, I've not heard the word Castlevania in a long time.
Have you not watched the Netflix cartoon?
I have,
yeah. It's pretty good. Pretty good.
I watched the first season. Mm. I haven't watched the second one, but I do remember playing the game
back
a
in the day.
Of years ago. Yeah.
Castlevania was classic. And if this Bloodstained Ritual of the Night is anything like that, count me in.
Cool.
On Facebook, Emily Mecca has said David Bowie high tops from Vans, and she published a photo. Did you see the picture of her trainers?
Incredible.
And it made me think of your new high tops that you purchased a while back, Mark. What did you get?
Beavis and Butthead.
Beavis and Butthead Adidas high tops.
Yeah.
Have you worn them yet?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm very, because they're white, I'm like, I'm only wearing them when I know there's going to be no mud, or they're not going to get, they're too nice to get spoiled. But the ones that she got look fantastic.
They were very cool. On Twitter, Phil Morris at Rumour1980 has said Warrior on Sky One, a martial arts and gangster fighting show based on the writings of Bruce Lee. We had a few people recommend this to us, actually. It's meant to be very good.
Oh,
very
okay.
good show. Yeah.
I saw it a lot.
Oh, get that caught.
On Instagram, Sherry Osborne, aka Busy Zen Life, has said the best book I read in a while was They Both Die at the End by Adam Silvera. I recommend it to everyone. I hadn't heard of this book, so I googled it, and apparently it's now being developed into an HBO TV series by J.J. Abrams.
Oh my god.
If J.J.'s involved, gotta be pretty
good.
Imagine
that is the end of the book. They both die at the end. You'd be furious.
End.
Well, it's a bit derivative, that name, because I've got a book called John Dies at the End, where he does, in fact, die at the end. So I think he's kind of ripped that name off a little bit.
Okay.
But, yeah, but, you know, if JJ's involved in making a series,
gotta be good. Count me in.
On Twitter, replicant H-146 at Harley Mumford has said, highly recommend Disease, the latest album by Beartooth. Straightforward heavy riffs and soaring vocals from one of the best upcoming metal bands. Again, I wasn't familiar with them. I Googled them. I haven't really listened to any of their stuff yet, but it turns out they were at Download when we were.
Damn it.
Yeah.
They probably crossed over with someone else, but they are getting some huge, huge five-star reviews on their album, so we'll have to check them out.
Yeah, for sure. On Facebook, Ian Dickey has said, Gomorrah, the series, is spectacular every single second. I've heard a lot about this. It's an Italian gangster series.
People say it's amazing.
Yeah, again, people I know who've seen it.
Isn't it Macca said it's one of his favourites?
Macca's seen it,
Leon's
seen it, they love it, yeah.
Oh, boy.
I'm surprised you've not watched it.
I know, I need to get a hold. I don't think it's on any of the streaming services. And,
oh, that sucks.
And the American Office is.
That's true, you know what I mean?
Always wins, every single time.
I read the other day that 14% of all content viewed on Netflix, because in America, is the American Office.
To be fair as well, I think when I came
that's
into
amazing.
When I came into the flat earlier, I did say I was watching the Moroccan Christmas episode earlier on, and then walked into Ben's flat, and there's an episode of The Office playing. Yeah.
I was watching the merger episode.
Yes.
Amazing.
That's the recommendation of the year. Watch The Office.
With the lazy Scranton video that they put together.
Scranton, what? The Electric City.
The Anthracite Museum.
That's so amazing. Good. I'm going to go home and watch The Office.
Big time.
That's it.
On Twitter, Magic Dell at Magic Dell has said, Don Martin, 3 decades of his greatest works. A wonderful book filled with hilarious cartoons by my personal favourite Mad Magazine cartoonist.
How apt.
How apt indeed, because it's just been announced that Mad Magazine is to close after 67 years.
Yeah.
I need more people like him recommending.
Quite right. I used to read, when I was, I don't know, about 13, 14, I used to buy Mad Magazine. The satire in there is brilliant.
There's also Mad TV. There was a comedy show as well.
Yeah, it was kind of like an SNL ripoff.
Yeah,
It was a breeding ground for a lot of people. Yes. I think Keegan-Michael Key started on there, and a lot of other famous names. But it is a shame.
I used to read Viz.
Me too. Yeah. I still own many of the Viz annuals.
So my good. Dad does. Yeah.
Viz rules.
So good.
I'm amazed that's still going, because the kind of jokes they used to tell, I don't even tell them now.
It's a risk.
Quite offensive.
On Facebook, Tabitha Clues. I would highly recommend Wives with Knives. It's incredible TV. It's definitely for all the family. I looked into this. I'd never heard of it. It's a documentary series about women who kill their partners.
Brilliant. I'm subscribing to this.
Wives with Knives,
that's right.
That's magnet.
It is pretty magnet. And it's clearly one of those things where the makers of the show came up with the name first.
Yeah.
This rhymes. This sounds cool. Let's try and figure out a show around it.
That would scare the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Oh, don't. I still watch Forensic Files episodes on Netflix, and that terrifies me if I'm watching it on my own at night.
Yeah.
Scary.
That's not magnet.
No.
And then finally, Nathan Foster at Nathan R. Foster has said, Mark Miller's The Secret Service comic is fucking ludicrously good. Now, if you don't know, The Secret Service is the comic from which Kingsman came.
Oh,
I
yeah.
So.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it is a very, very good comic series and a less good series of films.
Oh.
And there's another one coming soon. Oh,
there is, isn't there?
Prequel.
Yeah, yeah,
who needs that? Who was clamouring for that?
No one clamoured for The Golden Circle.
Jesus God.
The Golden Circle is genuinely shite.
That is so not Rainbow
Riddance. It's a shame, because I like the first one. Yeah. The first one's all right.
The first one is good. Do you remember when we got a 1-star review on iTunes?
Because
someone didn't like the fact that we bad-mouthed Kingsman 2.
Oh, no. They're going to come back now and make a new account. That's not cool. We're sorry to that person.
But thank you very much for all your suggestions. You can send them in to us. You can get us on Twitter at STTPodcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or email us podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. I really want a Mr. Whippy ice cream.
Oh. Yeah.
With a flake.
Yeah.
And a little bit of raspberry sauce on it.
Oh, get out of my head.
Oh, that does sound really good.
That sounds magnet.
It does sound pretty bloody magnet, that. Should we just go trawling around the streets until we see an ice cream van?
What's quite bad is where I work now, they have a shop that sells ice creams. So most days I'll go and get a Feast.
Yeah.
Pretty damn good. A Calippo.
Yeah.
I bloody love a Calippo.
A Fab.
Oh. Oh, my whole childhood was
and a Solero.
All on the same day? You love like 6 ice creams?
No, hell. That's over a week.
He must be buzzing after an hour.
100 stone. But
fat
it's,
crocodile,
it's...
fat bastard.
But honestly, I love a good ice cream.
Oh, me too.
Oh,
McFlurry's I love. I do. They've got a mint era one at the moment.
Oh, mint, no,
but
no, mint chocolate, no.
Never can be arsed. They never use the proper machine.
No, they just shove it in, don't they?
They just do it. I would. If I worked there, yeah. I'd be like, fuck it, ego. Like, I'm annoyed.
Yeah, like yesterday's laundry in a basket.
And they're never working, are they? Hi, can I have McFlurry? The machine's not working. Lying bastard, you can't be arsed. Yeah. I don't blame them.
I think that's a slanderous accusation against the good people of right? McDonald's.
Yes.
I mean, you know, these are not our opinions. This is the opinions of Mark.
Ben and Jerry's fish food.
See, I'm all about the pralines and cream, or pralines and cream, Haagen-Dazs, I don't know how you pronounce it, but that's good.
That's
shit.
Good stuff.
Oh, cookie dough.
Oh,
or cookies and cream Haagen-Dazs.
Haagen-Dazs is all of it's good.
Holy fuck, I want some ice cream.
Should we do this outro and then go and get some ice cream?
Yeah,
let's do that.
Let's.
Shall we do something crazy as well next week, guys?
What?
For the next episode. Yeah. Shall we do our second episode in a row with a 2-week gap?
Oh, what?
Rather than a lazy bastard 3-week gap that we've been doing recently.
Go on then. Yeah,
let's do it. Okay. We'll give you another one in 2 weeks. Let's tell them what's coming up on the show. Mark, what is our topic of conversation next time
this
around?
This is a weird one, and it's going to require quite a lot. It's a very personal one. That's what I like about it. It's our top 3 acting performances that won us over.
Yeah.
It's quite a mouthful, that. Yeah. But it all goes back down to you, Ben. You had one performance in one film that made you then love, and he's now become your favourite actor of all time because of Catch Me If You Can, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah. Giving away one of my answers, but yeah.
The whole world knows. The whole world knows this. But it's going to be a tough one because you've got to really think about that.
Yeah, and it does happen.
Yeah.
Already in my head, I'm thinking of people who I wanted to punch their faces in until they did one good role. I'm like, I love them now.
Yeah, so, Baby Driver.
Not that's
yet.
Not happening.
Ansel Elgort will never win me over.
Watch now, they're going to remake Blade Runner with
it. No. I actually said...
That would make me hate him more.
We were talking about the top 3 musicals, and I said about West Side Story, and I said to Ben, oh, your boy's going to be starring in it. You're like, who? Ansel Elgort's like, fuck off.
Yeah, quite right. Yeah. Wasn't that on air?
Yeah, there was.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Let's just repeat content.
So recap. Yeah. Oh my God, really?
It's competition.
Who the fuck knows? Gemma, what is our main review next time around?
Our main review, we're going to be watching a zomcom called The Dead Don't Die.
I'm not bothered, but
I mean,
fuck all that
out. I'm not jazzed about it, but
let's be true to the people who've spent 5 years listening to us. Okay. We don't want to review it, but it's the best of a very bad bunch. It's either that or Stuba, which I kind of wanted to see until I read the reviews, or Lion King, and I would rather eat a big bag of shit than watch Lion King.
Yeah.
So it's not happening. So we're watching The Dead Don't Die, but at least Uncle Bill's in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think we'll end up being pleasantly surprised because our expectations are so low.
Or just moderately meh.
Yeah.
If not, we'll talk about ice cream for 20 minutes.
Let's do that. But also, we've got a really good rewatch.
We do.
It's what I think is one of the most underrated films of all time, especially by this particular director. It's Quentin Tarantino's Jackie Brown.
That's insane. I'm surprised we haven't done it.
And we barely talked about it. I can't remember us ever really
talking
about it.
I've never seen it.
Well, you lie.
I'm joking. Well, that's what I have.
It's my favourite soundtrack.
Oh.
Like, the soundtrack is so, so good. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's going to be amazing. Mark, who are we masturbating over?
We are masturbating over, this is a big one.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott.
So at this point, I'm thinking there's no point me being on the episode.
No.
Because everyone knows what my Ridley Scott pick's going to be. And they already know one of my 3 topic picks.
Yeah.
So
it might be, you know, it might be a bigger splash.
Have
knows?
A week off.
Shall I?
Yeah.
You pair do it.
Oh, that would be
See if you can do it without me.
So bad. Probably get 10 million downloads, but yeah.
And we'll also give away an absolute fuck ton of prizes.
Yeah.
We'll do all the usual shit. We'll have some fresh pop culture recommendations, and there's a lot of good shit coming out right now. Stranger Things.
Yes.
Which I've already watched. I'm not going to say anything yet. I'm going to wait until one of our listeners recommends it next time, and we'll jizz over it.
If
in
they
a week.
Don't, we'll make up a name and say they recommend
it. Yeah, Dave Smith from Wigan. Bloody loves it.
he never shuts up.
Oh, Dave Smith?
Yeah.
Oh, Wiggo Dave.
Oh, is he the one that said about Emma Stone being good in Superbad and Superbad only?
He was.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's banter. Just everything comes out.
I really hope there isn't one of our listeners called that. That'd be
absolute gobshite.
Yeah. You're not welcome at Skipfest. If you turn up on the night, no Dave, you're going home.
But only if he's from Wigan.
Yes.
If he's like Dave Smith from Stockport, he's all right.
Yeah. He's fine. Oh, he's ace.
He's pretty cool.
He's good. He's our special guest.
Let's wrap this shit up because we've lost. we've lost the goddamn plot.
Ice cream time.
Stop.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.